Blog Talk Radio.
About this topic today, because what it discusses is basically once we come out as atheists, especially in a black community, what responsibilities do we have, whether you're a participant, whether you're a facilitator, someone just kind of, on the sidelines or what have you. Whether we realize it or not, one of the things that we're kind of thrust into the forefront in the spotlight to an extent, especially when we are in a minority of a minority community. And the more that we come out and the more that we express ourselves as atheists, then we have people kind of, gravitating towards us. We start talking about what can we do to help others come out. And, it's important to discuss how we go about, doing this. Is there, something structurally that we have to do? I know that at BNOA, we definitely agree that we have. I know that was that's something that became a passion of mine, was that, it was important for me to be open and out as an atheist. Because I know that there are others out there, and they may be looking for, fellowship with others. They may be looking to get involved in some kind of way, whether it's through some other type of organization. But it's still very important for us to address this issue. Now, I don't know if I kind of touched on any points that I should have. I probably will throughout the show, but I hope that was a start.
Oh, yeah, definitely, definitely. And, basically, I mean, I agree with you because we definitely need to get our face out there. We need to start basically putting a face to the black atheist community or to the just atheist community in general, but especially in the black religious community to show them that there are people out here who are non-believers and who are willing to stand up and say, look, we don't believe this. This is not, this doesn't make logical sense to us. We go by evidence. We go by, just facts and not necessarily standing on faith, which in many cases, it can't be proven. But But, you know, I think it's just imperative for us to kind of get our face out there, get to know people in the community, engage them. Because there are a lot of people who have questions. And the problem over the years is when they go to their leaders, you know, their pastors or, you know, anyone in a leadership position asking questions, most of the time the answer is God works in mysterious ways. Or it's in the Bible. You must seek and search it out for yourself, instead of the people being honest and saying, well, I'm not sure, I don't know, let me get back to you on that, and actually doing the research on it. Because as Pew Research has shown, that the majority of believers do not actually read the Bible for themselves. They listen to what the pastors or whomever have to say. And if you notice, when you speak to quite a few of them, they'll recapitulate what, you know, they've been told, but not necessarily quote scripture. And then when you do call them out on scripture, they use it out of context.
Right.
So, yeah, so it's just, it's real interesting. But now definitely we need to get out there and put a face to it. And I'm just really glad that we're able to, you know, engage people and answer their questions, because I've dealt with different people over the years. And, you know, we've kind of given enough information and educated people enough for them to make a rational decision. A few of them have left the fold. You know, some of them are on borderline. You know, they're going in between, but that happens. We all tend to vacillate, you know, when we first leave the fold. So, again, that's why we need a support system. That's why it's important for us to have our faces out there to engage people and to help them. Because
right.
Someone was asking, yeah, the other day, what exactly is the neo-atheist movement? Neo means new. Some people have an issue with neo-atheists, new atheists. And I can somewhat agree with that, because they've been around all the time. It's just that many of us were forced to suppress our opinions due to whether it's a social construct, your family, just a number of different reasons. But it's not necessarily a new movement. These people have been around for a while. I mean, if you go back and read about the Harlem Renaissance, you'll see that there are a lot of, you know, black atheists then, and even before them. But I just wanted to use that as a basis so people can go back and do some research. Atheists have been around for a long time. But I just believe that there has been an uprising or an upsurge in the numbers of people willing to admit their non-belief.
Right, and also to add to that, and this was kind of going back to the point I was trying to make earlier, is that, you know, once we come out as non-believers, there seems to be a misconception that beyond the non-belief, that there should be no questioning of, or there should be no skepticism, or there should be no type of structure whatsoever. And, yes, that is one thing that organized religion does, is that it provides a binding type of structure, to the point where, you know, you are placed in a bubble, you seem to be tunnel vision, and that there are a lot of rules. But as far as atheism is concerned, is that there seems to be this idea that, yes, once you discard the God concept, that it's kind of a free for all to some extent, that, you know, we don't have an obligation to judge anyone, or that we don't have an obligation to call something out if we think it could be harmful to either them or others. And that's something that I think we should address, because even as human beings, you know, some of the things that we do, again, what people must understand is that morality does not necessarily come from a God concept. It's a human concept. And if we see something, or if we notice something that could be detrimental to someone or something else, then we as atheists, you know, do we have a responsibility, or do we have the right to challenge? Because as skeptics, as free thinkers and non-believers, the concept of non-belief is not limited to God, so to speak.
Exactly. Exactly. We have a caller on the line, area code 801. Please tell us your name. 801? I think you're listening to this computer.
Yes, I hear myself in the background.
801, you're on the line.
Exactly. We have a caller on the line, area code 801. Please tell us your name.
It's Diana.
Hey, Ayana.
How are you?
It's Ayana.
Hey, Ayana. Yeah,
sorry,
we
turn off my computer. Is that the problem?
Right. Yeah. Okay. Turn your computer down.
What's the volume?
Is it okay now?
Yes. Yes, you're good. Thank you for calling in. Welcome.
Thank you.
You did such a great job on the show yesterday. Ayana was on Sister Talk TV out of New York, and the question was, the topic was, can a black woman be an atheist? And we just thought you did so well on the show.
Thank you. I was, 'cause you never know, 'cause you're sitting there, and the show is, you know, going on, so I'm just like, you know. But thank you. I did receive a lot of positive feedback from it, so I'm glad that I went on the show.
That is great. We were happy to support you as well.
Yeah, I was like, oh, my gosh, where did all these atheists come from? Like, I knew atheists was calling. Well, you were calling, and I knew Derek was going to call. But, yeah, it was like call after call after call. I was just so proud.
Yeah, I don't think they were expecting that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I couldn't help myself. I had to call twice.
Yeah, I heard. I was like, wow, you were the first caller. So. Weren't you?
I was the first caller.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait, wow. Yeah.
Excellent.
But,
go ahead.
No, I was just going to kind of comment on the whole, I don't know if, like, what topic you guys want to speak on. I was going to comment on the whole, like, can a black woman be an atheist? So, if that was okay.
Sure.
Okay.
Kind of what you were saying with the community and being out in the community and reaching out to others, I think that's, like, instrumental. After the show, we actually had, like, an after show on that, and or after show segment or whatever she calls it. And that was one of the questions that she actually just, like, how could you be, you know, an atheist when, you know, we went through all these trials and tribulations? And I think it'll be up on YouTube, but my response is that in order for, like, you to believe, like, something like that, you have to, like, automatically believe that blacks are inferior, like, in my opinion. Like, if you believe
right.
that being a slave, slavery, civil rights movement, and what were her examples, and a single mother were the three examples she gave, I believe that you have to believe that those people are inherently, like, intellectually inferior, only because, like, you're a slave and you want to be free. Like, that's just, like, who wants to be a slave was my, you know, question to her. Like, why do you need more? Because according to her, you need more than just not wanting to be a slave. You need it faith, and you need it, you know. And I think, like, it's very important that we're in the community because we have this issue of constantly demeaning, like, for self-esteem with the church. You can't do anything with God without God. You can't do it. And I think that, like, really – it's detrimental, I guess, because we're already disenfranchised. And on top of that, now we have, like, this extra supernatural thing that says, well, you're really nothing, you know, without me. Literally.
Right. And it's like we're doing it to ourselves as opposed to anyone else or any other race or what have you.
Right. I mean, and that's why I say, like, I'm not one to say, like, it's the government or it's us. Like, it's institutionalized. It's everybody. We collectively promote racism in this country. We collectively promote sexism in this country. And, you know,
right.
Anyway,
right. And so with that, and I'm sorry, Kim, if I'm kind of jumping the gun here, but even going into the, you know, the topic of the show today, as far as the new atheism movement, and I know this kind of goes in line with what was asked on the show yesterday about what we can do to start engaging the community with critical thinking and just what atheism is about, you know, because there's such a misconception about it. And also, do we have a right to want, you know, in our community, do we have, because, you know, we have disagreements about, I know you and I don't always agree on certain things, Kim and I don't always agree on certain things or certain topics or certain issues. But if we see someone within our own community or see people doing something that we think could be damaging, do we have a responsibility and a right to kind of check each other on that?
My answer is yes, absolutely. I mean, I think that, well, see, responsibility is a hard one. A right, yes. A responsibility, not necessarily. So yeah, I don't know. I think definitely we have a right. I mean, Christians do it all the time. They hear it, tell their kid they're going to hell because they think it's a bad thing. They tell their kid they're going to hell because they think that they're informing them of something, even though it's ridiculous. So I think we have a right to counter that, to tell the kid, you know. I mean, most kids actually, if you talk to them, they don't believe. You know, I asked my cousin about, you know, she says she believes in God. She doesn't understand God at all. So I said, what is God, you know? And I asked her how many were. She said, I don't know, about 1,000. And I'm like, okay. Like, she didn't understand. She clearly doesn't understand the concept of God. It doesn't make her any less. I mean, she's very smart. She does very well in school and, you know. But this whole, she's trying to reconcile things that don't make sense. You can clearly see when she's thinking, that it doesn't make sense. Well, mom said, you know, don't hate, you know, these type of people, or don't hate people. And yet, you know, in church we're told, okay, well, atheists are bad people, or people that aren't, you know, part of the congregation necessarily are bad people, particularly if they don't believe in our God. So she's constantly struggling with this, and I think at that age it's crucial to go into the community and implement critical thinking skills. So I feel that that's important, and I feel like the flip side is also important, dealing with people that are already atheists. It's a serious issue with people wanting to come out, and they feel like they don't have anywhere to go to. And the lady I spoke to, the reverend on the panel yesterday, was talking about how she has atheists in her church. It doesn't surprise me, and I don't think she was just saying that, because, number one, it's a social gathering, and number two, listen to what she said. She, in my opinion, she wasn't a traditional Christian. I'll leave it at that.
Right.
But she didn't, you know, right. She more or less dismissed the Bible. She admitted to taking a cart approach to it. You know, she said she believed in Jesus' teachings, but she was selective in even that. So, I don't think that... I think that it's important that we get out, that we say, no, there's a community here, and there's, you know, and all the time. I mean, one of the problems I think that we have in the Black community is that that the atheist community, in my opinion, ties science with this belief. And while many scientists are atheists and I get the whole scientific method, I'm a huge, you know, fan of it, obviously. But everybody's not into science, you know. I'm an attorney.
Yeah.
I'm not into science like that, you know. I'm
right.
Into critical thinking. I'm into, you know, I understand scientific method as an approach to you know, figuring things out. It's the best method that we have. But a lot of these conferences and things oftentimes are heavily populated with, you know, this hardcore science. So I think maybe showing that there's an interest outside of that. I mean, maybe the arts. I mean, there's plenty of atheists that are artistic, you know. There are that are into just other things, and it doesn't always have to be something that is, like, super-duper intellectual. And going back to the Black community, reaching out to people that aren't necessarily, that aren't atheists, but, you know, that aren't necessarily, I guess one of the problems in the Black community, getting off topic a little bit, but is this idea of just kind of going in there and saying, okay, accept science. And number one, it's kind of put alongside religion. You got to get rid of that. And number two, in the Black community, we have this issue of separating pseudoscience with science. Because with regard to eugenics, it was something that was like, oh, well, this is proven by science. And so we still accept that in our community, like, well, what science told us. It told us we were inferior. We know that not to be true. So we can't trust it. So getting over that first hurdle of separating pseudoscience from science is one of the reasons I think that we as atheists can't just go into the community and say science is the way and just accept the science and everything will be right.
Right, absolutely. I agree with that 100%. Because like you said, I mean to imply that atheism only incorporates science, you know, that's another misconception. It is very misleading. Because then that means that they can, it almost implies that they cannot apply any of their other, that they have to totally change everything about themselves. And that's not true. I mean, it should only be incidental that we don't believe in God.
Right.
You know, it should only be. There's so much more that encompasses us as human beings.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You know.
Exactly. And that's the reason why, you know, just, you know, piggybacking on what both of you said here, basically, you know, within the church community, there are non-believers in the church, and there are quite a few. As a matter of fact, our topic for next week is non-believers in the pulpit and the pew. And basically, it's a social construct because we're very social beings. And that's one of the reasons why I say one of our purposes is to get out there and have a system of support, as well as, I believe, in being a solutions-based movement. So I believe in getting out there and doing the outreach, and we're working on some things in the background so that we can, you know, ascertain different grants and get out there and educate the public and disseminate information. But I just believe that, you know, we have more of a responsibility than the religious people. And the reason why I feel that way, and that's just my personal opinion, is because we've been pointing the finger at them. Most of them aren't going to do it. They have no intentions of getting out there and being responsible in a lot of different ways. Now the responsibility falls on our plate, and it makes us look even worse if we don't do something as far as engaging the community and educating the community, so on and so forth. But that's just my personal take on that situation. I just feel that's my responsibility as a non-believer because I see what's wrong. I see what they're not doing. I'm tired of pointing the finger at them. I'm now pointing it at myself.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, as an individual, I feel responsible, but that, in my opinion, had little to do with religion. Because one of the things I always emphasize is the fact that I've always been that type of person that wanted to reach back to the community, even when I was religious. So it's not something that just popped up because I'm an atheist. It was becoming an atheist made me realize how much religion played a role in some of the things that I always wanted to, or played a role in keeping people in a certain class, or, you know, preventing them from progressing. But as far as wanting to reach out or feeling that I had some type of responsibility to the community, that's something that I've always inherently felt the need to do.
Oh, yeah, I agree, and I believe for most of us, we had that, you know, inherent responsibility to reach out to the community. But what I'm speaking of in particular, and I'll just give one example, with HIV and AIDS. I've seen a lot of churches lose tons of members due to HIV and AIDS, mental health issues, and just a lot of different dysfunctional issues, you know, addictions. But yet they sat back and said nothing. As a matter of fact, in some cases, they discouraged people from getting the help that they needed. I posted an article earlier this week about how there was a church over in London, and it happens in the United States and other places as well, how they were discouraging their members from taking their HIV meds, saying that God would heal them. Those people died. I know different churches in which almost the entire tenor sections of the choir died off from HIV and AIDS. But yet they're silent on the issue. But they know what's happening. And in many cases, some of these leaders have the virus as well. But they have enough money to afford the better medicine. But they're taking theirs, but encouraging people to allow God to heal them. But yet they're running up to, you know, the best hospitals in the country to try to find a way so that they can live longer.
Right.
So why does
that
apply to
the Teresa
and not
story?
Other people?
You know? I mean, I'm just saying, she's like the, I said that's the Mother Teresa story.
Right.
Like, that's what Mother Teresa, yeah. Convincing the poor that, you know, to give her money. And when she gets sick, she goes to the best hospital in the country. So, yeah, and telling her followers to pray over their illnesses while she receives additional medical care for hers. So, yeah, I completely agree, but I still don't know if atheists have an obligation, or specifically Black atheists have an obligation and responsibility to do so. I mean, I would love to think that they feel that way or
right.
they feel compelled, but I don't think that there's some objective reason that Black atheists have that obligation. I remember, I don't know if you guys are familiar with Star. I don't know his actual stage name. The Hater or whatever, Star and Buckwild, they had a show.
I remember Star.
Okay. He's an atheist. He spoke.
Awesome.
He always, yeah.
Yeah, you
one
can
of the
kind of tell from his shock jock style.
No, I like him a lot, but
yeah,
I
do,
know,
me too.
As well, but one of the things he asked him about, I guess taxes or something. I guess he's in at that time he was in, I guess, a tax bracket that required him to pay very little taxes, and he was like, "Why should I care about the poor?" Like, that was his response, and I don't hate him necessarily. So, I mean, I think he actually does philanthropic work. I don't think he felt that he was obligated to. I think he just does it, you know, to do it. But, and I think that was the point that he was trying to make when, you know, he's like, I don't want to pay any more taxes than I'm paying, and I'm rich, so, or, you know, I'm well off, so I don't have to. You know, there's certain breaks that were available to him that aren't available to middle class and poorer individuals.
Excellent.
I kind of agree with him on that.
All right, well, we have Alphonse on the line. Alphonse would like to join into the conversation. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hello, Alphonse.
Well, I want to give a shout-out to my two personal saviors, Mandisa and Ayana. Y'all the reason why I'm an atheist. Like I was telling Mandisa, the first time I ever typed in black atheism, Ayana's video popped up. I watched it. I was like, wow. Like, damn, I'm an idiot all these years. Wow. So, and then just, you know, talking to Mandisa and everything, you know, learning, you know, different cultures, different backgrounds about religion, it just, you know, all made sense in a weird way. And religion doesn't make sense, so.
Right. And, I mean, you, Alphonse, actually, you deserve credit. You deserve credit for, you know, all the research that you have done beyond, you know, what you have seen and what you have learned. So I almost feel like I can't take credit for anything. But I mean, I appreciate, you know, the acknowledgement, and I appreciate you for reaching out to me and, you know, for reaching out to Ayana and being a part of this,
yeah.
Because it is very important. You know, it makes me feel proud to do, you know, for us to know that we're doing what we're doing, you know, and being visible for so that other people can come out and speak out. So
yeah, like I said, when I seen that video, I was just like, this woman is flat out saying, hey, I'm an atheist. Just like,
yeah,
that. She took all that hate mail and just was like, hey, oh well, this is how I feel. And I was like, man, if she can do that, I can do that, you know. So, and that's why I'm, you know, the way that I am, I'm so vocal about it. But the thing that I disagree with is, like, as far as black atheists saying that, you know, we're responsible or as atheists, like those sayings, I feel like we are no longer individuals after we say that. Like, when, like, Christians have responsibilities. Like, they're supposed to pay tithes and offering every week. They're supposed to go to church once or twice a week. They're supposed to pray. Like, as non-believers, we shouldn't have responsibilities. I guess that was the whole conglomerate of us, you know, sharing ideas and, you know, having different groups to discuss how we can further humanity, not, you know, say push atheism,
you know,
but
I can agree with you, but the reason why I differ on that, and this is Kim, Black Free Thinkers,
right?
And
okay.
the reason why I differ on that is, I'm not saying that it's the responsibility of all atheists or black atheists across the board or what have you. I'm saying me, because I criticize religion. I criticize the church. And I just got to the point where I'm not going to criticize them anymore. I'm just going to go and do it.
Okay.
And I feel that that's my responsibility. And I'm not saying that's for everyone, but that's why
I said
my opinion.
Then that's cleared up. I definitely respect that, because me personally, like, how I promote positive atheism, I just lead by example. Like, I go,
right.
It's Phoenix. Like, I'm in Arizona, it's hot. I go, I give homeless people water. They say, God bless you all the time. They just say, well, what church are you doing this for? I was like, actually, no, I don't believe in God. And
right.
You know, thirsty, you're going to drink the water? Or they drink the water and just they still say, God bless you. And I'm just like, well.
Right. Right.
God ain't giving you no water. But okay.
There you go.
Right. And let me just, you know, allow me.
Hold on a second. Geared toward the people who criticize religion, because if you're going to criticize them for A, B, or C, if you have a better way to facilitate a solution to that issue, then I feel that it becomes your responsibility to help out. I'm not saying you have to do it alone, because you're definitely not alone. And that's where brainstorming comes in amongst us. But if you're going to criticize them for not doing the outreach like I spoke earlier, I just feel instead of criticizing them, I'm just going to get out there and try to make a change, because it makes me, to me, it makes me look worse than them, because I know that change can come about. Even if I only change the life of one or two people, that's one or two people that I help.
I understand. Right. I definitely respect it, but at the same time, like, as a former Christian, and I've been through a rough process, like, I used to think that I was going to be a Black Hebrew Israelite. I went from Christian to I'm spiritual to all types
right.
of stuff.
And yeah,
I actually studied and I found out why human beings are so connected to their religion and their beliefs, because they attach their emotions to it. They attach their day-to-day activities to it. They don't make decisions yeah. without it. So for me, like, just a mere human being I am, to tell someone, hey, what you know is shit, that's arrogant, and that comes off arrogant. Now, I can question, especially if it's forced upon me. It's just like I always get in these debates at school for some reason with Black females. I don't know if they just want me to date them or something like that, but I always get told, well, you just look like a powerful man of God, and I just sense the presence of God on you. I was like, well, that's weird, sweetie, because I don't believe in that. Like,
right.
And
right.
it's just, when I get in these conversations, you know, I get told the personal testimonies, and I'm like, I don't mean to hurt your feelings, but your personal testimony is not enough to convince me. Like, I wasn't there. I didn't see it.
Right.
So,
that's it.
Right.
So. Like.
Right.
Maybe I should use that line.
Right.
I'm serious. It's sad. It's sad, but it's the truth. Like, that's
yeah.
a cop out. I mean, that's some pimp stuff to tell a hooker or an oncoming hooker for employment. You know, like, why?
Mm-hmm.
You can't see it, but it's there. And I'm like, no,
right.
No.
Right. Well, I was going to just give, like, just a little example, just kind of going back to when you said, you know, you deliver water and stuff, which is a great thing, you know, because, again, yes, there is a misconception that, yes, you have to believe in God in order to be good. And, you know, when we tell people that we're atheists and we don't believe in God, they act so surprised, you know, that we are nice people, that, you know, we aren't these devil worshipers or what have you, which, you know, does get kind of tiring to refute. But just using that as an example, you know, if you know some, just all religious beliefs aside, whether you're an atheist, Christian, or whatever, let's say, for example, if you were involved in a charity organization and you knew that there was someone, you know, who was pocketing some money for whatever reason from the organization or whatever. You know, they may be paying a bill, they may be doing, you know, whatever. And you see that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do you think that just as human beings, do you think you have a right to say, even if you don't, like, report them or whatever, do you think that there's a responsibility for you to say, you know what, hey, man, you know, I don't think you ought to be doing that, you know. Maybe there's another way you can kind of get your money or whatever, or just to kind of, you know, if you need help, I'll help you. But, you know, don't just take from it. You know what I'm saying? Does that stop once we become non-believers? You know, if we see that there's something wrong, you know, just, and that's just like one example. You know, do we have a right to say, you know what, you know, you might need to kind of chill on that for a minute.
I went through something like that, and I believe I told you about it, Mandy. So I used to, when I was still questioning religion, I actually fed the homeless at a church. And we
yeah.
that I didn't like the fact that they held the sandwich hostage. Like, you had to hear the word mm-hmm. of God before you got to eat.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And it was like an hour, and they'd be praying, saying grace for like 30 minutes. I'm like, it's not that many germs on earth to pray that long for. Like, man, just do the little cross and that's what's up. But
right.
I did that at a
community center. So mine was secular. And I guess I'm going to pose a question to all of you. But, yeah, I used to volunteer at a local homeless shelter here in New York City. And one of the things that used to disturb me, I was a passive atheist. So I wasn't active then. But it was constantly like, God bless you, God bless you. And I had like this weird feeling, like on one hand, like I'm like, okay, really? I'm an atheist. And on the other hand, I'm like, okay, well, these people are at their worst. You know, they're not, you know, a lot of them actually were veterans, all the way back from Vietnam to present-day Iraq War. And, like, this kind of, on one hand, so I'm like, yeah, all right, whatever, I'll let it slide. And on the other hand, I didn't want to let it slide because of that. But I don't know, do you guys feel obligated or do you feel uncomfortable telling people that are in that type of situation, like, I guess, your beliefs or that, I mean, how far do you get in that situation?
Mm-hmm.
Like, are you like, oh, there's no God or not necessarily you say that. But
I'll pick my battles on that. Like,
right, yeah, and it's subjective.
If someone, I'm not going to say bum, I don't like that term, but a homeless person says, God bless you, I'm just like, oh, okay, well, that's cool. But if someone in a debate, which I'm find myself, it's weird. In my non-belief now, I find more that I have to defend my non-belief more than ever than I have to defend my belief. But I'm always in these little debates online, and when someone is cornered, they always say, well, I'm praying for you and God bless you. I think that is the most offensive and disrespectful thing to do.
Yeah,
you can't say anything else, and you just say, God bless you and praying for you. Basically, forget what I'm saying and what I don't believe that you can't prove. So I'm just going to say, I pray that one day you think like me. That's just not, I think that's some sucking shit, for real.
Yeah, well, my answer to that is I'll pray for Satan for you. Because I've already, like, noted that I think that your God is, like, evil and barbaric and blah, 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 all these evil things. And then you turn around and say, well, I'm going to pray for you. Well, it's highly offensive. And the same way that you think the devil, well, obviously most of the time I'm talking to Christians, if you think the devil is evil and blah, 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 then it's the equivalency of me saying, oh, well, that's nice. I'm going to pray to the devil for you. So that's what I let him know.
That's
right. Right, right. Well, it depends on how the situation, but me personally, depending if I was in that particular situation and they said, God bless me, I'll just smile and walk away. I wouldn't say anything. I wouldn't acknowledge it one way or the other. But if they questioned me, I would just say that I don't subscribe to religion. And I try to find ways out of the conversation. But going back to what you said about when people say, God bless you, depending on who it is and how nasty they are, I'll say something like, well, I'll think for you.
Yeah, I said that before, too.
Yeah, I mean, like, if the person is, you know, like the lady I was talking to yesterday, or debating, if you will, like, that panel is fine. Like, I don't mind. Obviously, I was brought on a show for that, so that was a poor example. But in those situations, I'm fine. It's the situations where somebody is at their lowest that I feel almost compelled not to say something. Like, I'm just like, well, if that's what you have to keep you going, then, you know, should I take that away?
It's almost a term of endearment. I mean, it don't bother me because I don't believe in it. And, you know, one time I did question it. Well, you know, you're going to be with Satan. I was like, no, I don't believe in him either. Like, not just one, like none of them. Like, yeah, none of them. So, I mean, like, realistically, I am an asshole. I come off very, like, I'm a nice guy, whatever, but I'm real sarcastic when you take me there. And, well, you know, you're going to spend your eternity with Satan. I was like, well, no, I don't believe in him, and I don't believe in a place that's going, I'm going to burn in torment forever. So, I mean.
Right. And one thing to remember, Alphonse, and I'm probably pretty sure you know this too, is that, again, the burden of proof is not on you. It's on them. They say this God is, you know, is real. It's up to them to prove it. And, you know, yeah, they definitely, you know, and that's one thing that we don't, you know, it's unfortunately almost a natural instinct for us to become defensive because of a lot of the stuff that they say to us. But again, you know, it is their responsibility. And one thing I always say is, unless you can poof your God right in front of me, then there's no need for me to believe in it.
Yeah, I don't get into that. I just feel like as a human being, like Christians do good things because they think something is coming back in the return. I do good things because it just needs to be done. If I put myself in that situation, if I have water for 2 days, I would want someone to give me some water, especially if I can't do it.
Right.
So I don't want to, you know, base
and
my
that's
morality.
The problem that I
you know.
Have. I guess it's the same thing you were saying earlier with your homeless shelter or your homeless experience. Your volunteer experience with the homeless in the church. Like, that's one of the reasons why I kind of wanted to do something with my organization. missionary-like, but not like the missionaries. You know,
right.
Like, obviously, there'll be no prayer, or there'll be no, well, you got to accept Jesus to your life before we give you food. Like, that,
you
got to
watch a Carl
America,
Sagan
like,
video.
Yeah, like,
right.
Yeah, like something like that, and like here in America, obviously I can do a lot of stuff, but I actually wanted to not just with my organization, but hopefully linking up with another secular organization outside the country and doing that, because I'm just sick and tired. Like, it gets to the point where it's like, okay, whatever, you believe in polytheistic God, you believe in God, you believe in whatever. Here's food. We'll get to your belief system later, but you're starving right now. You got a belly, you don't have, you're malnourished to the point where you can't even breastfeed your child. Like,
right.
That to me is so much more, it's highly offensive when you see that these missionaries are still going out there with their Bibles, with, food at the end of the sermon, at the end of the, oh, I accept Jesus and all of these rituals.
Yep.
That's when they get the food. And I'm like, it's so freaking offensive. I'm like, why go through all, like, if your God is real, why are we going through all of this? Why do you give them the food?
Exactly.
Because they're already going to make that association. It's human nature. They're going to make the association. Even if you didn't do all that, if you simply came there, I'm a Christian and here's food. Christians are good people because, they are now linking their lack of they're no longer starving to, that Christian that gave it to them.
Exactly. Right, and it's not only with that situation with the food, but it's also with people who have, like, maybe a drug or alcohol addiction, and they go to church, and with, their newfound religion, in many cases, some are able to put that addiction down, some are encouraged to go to rehab or what have you, and so then now instead of that addiction, now their new addiction becomes their religion, codependency transference. So, again, that happens in a lot of cases, and when that religion fails them, in many cases they return either back to that original dysfunction or some type of new dysfunction. With that being said, do we play a role, or should we be a factor in any type of social justice movement?
I think so. I think so. I mean, even like, like you said, Yana and Al and Kim, going back to, we're not trying to, dangle a carrot, and push that this is what you should, believe, or you should subscribe to our point of view, in order to get our help. However, I don't see the harm in saying, this is our point of view. There should be no reason why we have to hide it. There should be no reason why we have to assert it. Once people say, God bless you or whatever, you should know up front that I am. It shouldn't even be an issue that I'm an atheist. And you should know that because I am, then please be mindful of what you say to me. Not necessarily that I want you to restrict yourself, but, at least think before you speak.
Well, it's not like, we're going around with, fuck God t-shirts on.
Right.
I would like to. I mean,
even
it's not like you're going
right
there and you're just going
know.
In their face and being like, I'm sure there are atheists out there that are just like over the top, but they're rare. That's why you don't see them. That's why there's not enough news coverage on them. Like, it's just, and then in return, you're constantly being bombarded. Actually, what I found interesting, and this is something that I didn't even contemplate, when I started BAM, one of the first odd groups of people that started to support me were those that believed in non-traditional American religions.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, they started coming out of the woodworks. It was like, because I guess since they're so different and they believe in, like, different spirits and whatever have you, some of them were, or one of them was polytheistic even. That was their thing. They're, like, tired of being bombarded with Christianity. It's so hard for Christians. I guess it's the same for anybody that's in the majority to actually stop and look and say, we are bombarding them, or we do have these type of privileges at our disposal. So, yeah, that's some of the support that I've received is from people from minority religions that are just freaking tired of living in a society that is just that bombards them with Christianity or whatever. So.
Yeah, well, I just want to base, like I said, I don't want to base doing something good on a religion. And the story that goes with that, that same homeless shelter, like what I used to do, I used to donate money to that shelter. Like I said, it was connected to a church. And one time they approached me and asked me to be a member. And I was like, well, I don't really want to be a member of your church. You go to another church or... No, I'm just not. I don't go to church anymore. So it got to the whole thing about that. I kind of, you know, weaseled my way out of it. And so they used to send me letters of how much money that I donated. And I donated a lot because I like feeding homeless people. It's just a passion of mine. So finally, you know, because I haven't been in a long time, I was just like, you know what, I can do this by myself. I can go to Fry's or the grocery store and get food and take it out there by myself.
Mm-hmm.
So they sent me a letter saying, well, you know, we miss you and everything. You know, could you give us a call? So I just flat out told them. I was like, I really don't. I like what you're doing, but I don't like what's connected to it. I was like, I'm a good person, and you've seen that, but we don't share the same beliefs. And I just flat out told them, like, I'm an atheist. I do not believe that there is any type of higher being. And they were floored. I was like, how could you not tell us this? Like, you could have distracted the spirit or something like that.
No.
I was like, well, I mean, people got fed. I mean, it wasn't a food shortage. And like, I donated money. Y'all used that. I didn't ask for my money back. Like,
you should.
Right.
And not to get it back, but only to see, like, how far they're going to take this atheist thing, like the evil money.
So it was a real big thing. And I found out because I had a friend that went to that church that the pastor talked about it and everything. So, I mean, it's just, I don't want to connect me being a good human to that. And as far as a movement, I just feel like as individuals, just as a human being, you should just want to do good for mankind. And if that's not your decision, that's your decision. You got to live and die with that, not good or bad.
Yeah.
Right. You just want to do the right thing because it's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
Or even if you don't want to do the right thing, or, you know, I definitely get, you know, what you're saying there, you know, but yeah.
Exactly. Like, we always talk about Black Sun Bob. Like, as much as I disagree with this dude's standpoint, man, he got a right to believe whatever he want to. I seen one of the dumbest shows about homosexuals that he did, and I was like, that makes no fucking sense at all.
Right.
Like, even though he may have created or made that pseudoscience up, he got to believe whatever he want to believe. If it gets him through the day, that's cool. I have a right not to accept that crap. So.
Right, but it's interesting because he does push it, though. It's very careless of him to push it as if it is fact. And I don't know if you saw the last show where he hung up on Norm Allen Jr. because, you know, it's like when you can't take a dissenting opinion or even take facts that counter that pseudoscience, you know, then you can't get mad at the person who is presenting it. Because
yes,
if you present it.
He's a king of atheists. He can do that, okay?
Well, he can, but then he can't be. Well, the thing is that, you know, again, he's getting. But he can't be upset when people draw away from him when he is criticized. And, you know, he can't say that Ayanna and I aren't Black anymore because we don't subscribe to what, and he said that, you know, if we subscribe to this law, he said,
though,
he pulled our Black card because we said we are nothing, you know, we do not subscribe to his crazy way of thinking.
Maybe I should do that so I can get a loan. Yeah, I guess, for real.
I mean, I'm telling you, it's interesting. And then when he says he's a king of all Black atheists, he is promoting this stuff in the name of atheism. And that is very
dangerous.
Misleading, and it's wrong of him to do.
That's extreme.
Also dangerous because people will believe that we're all like that. You know, people like to put other people inside of a box. And from what I've gathered from talking to different, you know, theists, is first of all, they have a misconception about atheism. But then when they see people like that saying these things and promoting, you know, what we consider as nonsense in some regard, then it makes us all look bad. And I guess my question is, you know, going back to the question earlier, do we have a right to correct this person? Because I've seen a lot of people take a back seat because many of us aren't quite sure how to deal with that specific issue. Now, your opinion is your opinion, and you're entitled to it, but when you're causing irreparable harm to all of us in general across the board, do we have a responsibility or right, whichever words you know you're comfortable with, do we have a responsibility or right to correct them?
Because the responsibility and a right, a responsibility, I can't accept, like, a right, yes, absolutely. I mean, my approach wasn't, it was the backseat approach, if that's what you want to call it. It's just because I didn't think it warranted a response. On one hand, and I contemplated it, you know. I mean, from a business standpoint, I'm like, does it make sense? I mean, to be honest, Mandisa and I have a much larger base than he does.
Yeah.
And so the more we talk about him, which is what he wants, the bigger his base gets.
Right.
Now, the more publicity we give him. So I said, screw it. Why even acknowledge it? Now, Mandisa, I mean, her approach might be different because they're both in Atlanta or whatever.
Yeah.
But at
and
the end of the day, huh?
No, I was saying that because the names are so similar, I was getting people inboxing me, you know, messaging me privately through different forums, asking me, were these guys affiliated with us? And I had kept having to explain that we weren't, you know, so it was a more dire issue. It was more, you know, the issue was more imminent because, you know, the names are so similar. We are in the same area and people are looking at that. So, yeah, I did have to go address it. I was asked to address it, and I had to make the distinction, and I was proud to do it because I'm like, no, y'all will not lump yourselves in with us and what we're trying to do and possibly undermine what we're doing.
Exactly.
Right. I didn't make a public statement about it. I had a number of people, same thing, because Jermaine and I constantly argued about it. But I had, and I handled it the way that I felt was most appropriate, which was in private, just because, again, I understand it's completely different for you since you guys are in the same area. But for me, I didn't feel that it warranted my response. And so I did it in private. I got a lot of hate mails, like, you're a racist bitch, you're this, you're that. And I was like, okay, well, that's not me. Because his organization name is also obviously very similar to mine. People thought it was a chapter, which is something I didn't even contemplate. I was like, well,
right, chapters.
So people thought he was a chapter of us. And, I mean, so he, you know what, he used a marketing ploy and was semi-successful, in my opinion, with that as far as, you know, pushing his organization, using both of our, or what is it, a hybrid between our organization names.
Mm-hmm.
But, again, I mean, I'm looking at your organization. You have a good amount of support. I'm looking at my organization. I feel like I have a good amount of support. And both of us together have more support independently than he does, like significantly more support than he does.
Oh, yeah.
So
and after
I
that initial
like,
response, oh, forget it. You know, I didn't feel a need to warrant anything else because, you know, I said what I said and that was it. You know, now I'm done. Now we can get back to work.
Exactly, yeah, and I think the reason why when that first came about, you know, Mandy and I had spoken about it because, you know, we were hosting, you know, the show together. And I was basically saying we won't give him an audience. I didn't want to read him. I addressed it. I denounced what I needed to denounce, gave it about 5 minutes, and I was done with it because I didn't want to increase his audience base. I didn't want to give him any promotion. But in addition to that, the reason why I felt that we should not give whatever he was saying any type of credibility is because if it backfired on him, I didn't want him to play the role of a martyr either. So I didn't want to give him an out either way.
Right.
And so that's, and so I guess you guys took the same general approach that I took. If it gets worse, you know, I mean, I kind of take it a catastrophe at a time, if you will.
Yeah, like, right now, it's comedy gold I'm sorry, I thought you were going to say something.
I can't even sit through 5 minutes of his shows. Like, I'm serious. This is fucking horrible. I'm just like, where did this dude come up with this stuff? Where does he get his references from? Like, I don't know. But as far as, like, go ahead.
But that's the thing. Like, he's very, first of all, he has a base because there are tons of people that think like him. And
yeah.
contrary to the fact that he's an atheist, he might not believe in a God. A lot of his ideologies that he does believe in are very dogmatic. Like, you know,
they
come from other religions. And so maybe he rejects the idea of a God, and I'm not even sure. Like, I'm very reluctant to say that somebody's not an atheist. But if you look at his approach to things, it's very religious in nature.
Yeah, they are.
So I don't, you know, and that's why he actually, one of the things he brags about is having the support of the church, which, in my opinion, is not something necessarily to brag about.
Like, right. I mean, that does make you a hypocrite.
That
I agree with, because that, I mean, that term hypocrite, man, at least I know how I feel about that. But, yeah, that totally is some hypocrite stuff. And, like, his law of reproduction show was fucking hilarious. I'm just like, really? There's a law of reproduction? Like, really? He doesn't know about asexual, like, cells and all that? Like, really?
Right.
And I found interesting, on the show, Norm Allen said that he agreed with him on that there was an actual law of reproduction. Of course, Norm Allen didn't get to explain it, but I think on the show he said he actually agreed that there was a law of reproduction. But, I mean, knowing, haven't heard, I mean,
it probably was not in the same context of what.
Oh, right. Positive. That is absolutely not in the same context. But I'm assuming it was in its most basic form that you need a man and a woman to procreate.
But it doesn't mean that we all men and all women have to procreate. I mean, it's just.
I mean, but
it's a ridiculous notion.
But you don't necessarily need a man and a woman. You just need an egg and sperm.
Well,
that's it.
All primates have those. Like, that's what you're not understanding.
Right.
But my last, like, statement or whatever, like, the term hypocrisy, that and atheism or non-belief, I just don't see. Like, I bring up two situations that's dead real quick. I'm not going to, like, start no fire. What I see, like, hypocrisy as is what black, whatever dude name is. That's total hypocrisy.
No, that's me.
That's total,
That's me, King. Black Freethinkers. That's me.
No.
Oh, no, he's saying Black
King.
Son?
Yeah, Black Son, about a king. Like,
yeah,
he's going,
yeah,
total
he's definitely a hypocrite.
that's total extremism. Now, as far as, like, the stuff that happened online on with LaWanda or whatever, I think, like, that was just a little bit too much because that's her job. That's what she wanted to do. And as an individual, if she wanted to poke fun at people, I don't have a right to, like, criticize that because that's how she thinks. Like, I have a friend now or whatever.
You took that situation out of context. It's not so much about her poking fun at people. That wasn't the issue.
Right, yeah, because we all do it. I mean, we all do it. I'm sorry, I'm going to let Kim finish. But, yeah, that is something that we all do. That wasn't the issue at all.
Right, that's not the issue. The issue is, basically, if these are your clients, you know, A, B, and C are your clients, and you're receiving money from them, you're interacting with them, you're engaging them, you're Facebook friends with them, for you to go take their status updates, post it in a room, poke fun at them, but yet, you know, give them a big old hug and kiss the next time you see them like you absolutely love them, I feel that's bad business practice. To me, that's hypocritical. Those are your clients. Those are the people who pay you. Those are the people who help put food on your table. Now, whether you want to do that or not, that's on you, but I have a right and I'm entitled to give my opinion. You don't have to agree with it, and I'm okay with that.
That's true, but the thing is, though, they paying this woman for a service. Like, she's not going in to get paid to care what they think. Like, it's just like,
but no one's saying about caring what they think. But if she didn't care what they thought, she wouldn't have posted it. And it's not so much about what I'm talking about basic business ethics, a professional code of conduct. You have to respect
the
people that pay you.
But that's the thing, though, that's got me floored. Like, people handle different business situations different. How Mandisa handle her business is totally different, probably how I handle mine. And, hey, whatever gets you through, you know?
Right, but do we have to, like, but that goes back to the question of if we see something that could possibly be hurtful in the future? Do we not have a right to at least discuss it? You know, again, it wasn't a matter of
hurtful, but hurtful how though?
If you were hurt,
to a movement, or hurtful
hurt
to her,
not us.
Yeah, no, definitely hurt.
Well, this is the thing, though.
It would affect her negatively, not us. We were trying to help her to see how, let's just say hypothetically, if one of her clients became a non-believer, they joined the group and they saw her comments, and let's say she took one of their status updates and they found it, they would have a right to be upset. But then in turn, they can turn around and put the word out about her being, you know, what have you, and it would hurt her business practices. All that was.
I mean, I got to be honest with you or whatever. Like, I've chatted with this woman. Like, her whole business is not just with church people or whatever, so I don't think it would hurt her that bad. But just from a personal standpoint or whatever, like, what if questions? That's for the birds. If it hasn't happened yet, like, she's been a non-believer all her life, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, we don't necessarily, I mean, that's, yeah.
Yeah, that's neither here nor there. But I just wanted to bring up that as far as comparison to the Black Sun Bow. Like, that's, like, what he does, that's total hypocrisy. As far as someone, what they do in their business and their non-belief, I think that's two different realms.
I mean, again, though, you know, I do think that, you know, I guess we won't see totally eye to eye on that issue. And that's fine. Like I said, that's okay because, you know, I know that I understand, we understand, you know, where you're coming from with that. And I understand, I totally get. I do think, though, that if we see something, especially when it is very passionately stated in a certain forum, that these things need to stop. You know, that we have, again, you know, like I said, you know, you said, you know, that Ayanna and I were very inspirational. And, again, I appreciate that. And from what I see, you know, you've been definitely been more vocal. You know, you've been speaking out more. It's almost like, well, you know, to heck with, you know, what people may think, you know, as far as business is concerned, what I stand for and my, you know, and myself, you know, is going to be more important in the end than, you know, than that. And that's fine as well. And that's what we encourage, you know, because there should be no reason why anyone's religious beliefs or lack thereof should affect their business. But unfortunately, it can. It has the potential, you know, to be harmful to anyone that is a non-believer. And I just think that, you know, for certain things that we can be, I guess, mindful of or to possibly help someone else with, to see another perspective, I just don't think that's a bad thing for us to do.
Okay, I mean, but this, yeah. Like I said, my whole thing about that is this. There's no problem with helping or having concerns or having an opinion. Like, I just think it's two different realms, and whatever she chooses to do, I'm pretty sure she knows the consequences of this. She can lose business.
Okay, yeah, and that's fine, you know. that's fine.
I just didn't want to be connected to, like, a movement. And that's what had, like, totally, like, put a bad taste in my mouth. I'm like, hold on, a movement? Like, is we about to storm the Capitol?
No, no. No one was doing that. Some of us will be on the front lines. I think, you know, Ayanna is definitely someone that's going to be on the front lines. I know I will be, Kim will be, there will be some of us that
will be more
visible than others.
I will be too. But my thing is, I did the whole Marine Corps thing for 4 years. I really don't like being told what to do, or I have responsibilities, or my responsibility as a non-believer to not believe in God. That's it.
it's individual.
Like,
it's individual.
I know we're all talking about.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, like, I've also been in the military, and that's one of my issues, too, like, of the follow the leader thing and don't question is exactly like religion. And I did well, but I could have done better if I would have been a better follower, because that's exactly what it's like. But I think we're misconstruing things. Like, you don't have to, it's not follow the leader in the atheist movement, and I will call it a movement because I believe it is an actual movement. it's like, it's just the feminism. I mean, and I don't mean the issues are the same, because normally I get attacked for that. But it's like any other movement where you have a bunch of people. We tend to have a bunch of people with different religious beliefs. You tack on, you know, if there's a rally about something you're really passionate about, you might come to that. And if it's something that you think is freaking stupid, you might not come to that. I mean, look at Dave with American Atheists. There are plenty of atheists that think that the cross, right, ground zero, was a stupid issue. And then you have atheists that are like, no, this is a very important issue. Both can be in the movement, or both of those ideologies could be comprised of people that are in the movement, but they don't have to attend every single event, nor does it, I don't think any movement puts obligations on anybody. It simply says that, you know, please participate. We ask people to do things, you know, to help us promote where it is. As far as the atheist community in general, I think the main thing is, and I'll use the American Atheist, is that issue of separation of church and state. I think that is the main issue. With us, and I'll speak for my own organization, perhaps it's the same for Mandisa, but with us, it's more than that. It's not because you can't just say, okay, separation of church and state. The problem is, in our public schools, it's very heavily religious, which shouldn't be the case. You know, it's more religious than other schools in white areas. And then we have, like, a host of other issues. So it's not, like, for me, it is ultimately separation of church and state, because you can never completely control, and why would you want to, somebody's belief system. But at the end of the day, people should be able to live through the stigma of saying of not believing in any particular deity or whatever. You shouldn't be penalized for having a particular belief system. But simply because you're an atheist and you want to be outspoken, I mean, you might not be an activist. I mean, that's perfectly fine. But for those of us who are activists, we do believe that we have certain responsibilities to our organizations, to our members, to promote whatever agenda it is that we're trying to promote. So anyway, that's my take on it.
Right. And also, too, and y'all know, I think we all know that, you know, we're all very caring. I know Ayana's caring, you know, I'm caring, Kim is caring, and Alphonse, I'm sure you're caring as well. It really is not something that, you know, we're trying to beat over the head of other people when we say, well, you know, maybe something isn't quite right with, and just, this is just on, you know, this is just on a human level. It may not have anything to do with, you know, atheism at all, but, you know, if we care about people, sometimes it may seem as if the love is tough, so to speak, you know, and also, too, it's not that it's being directed at everyone. Do we think that everyone should adhere to what we're saying? Absolutely not, because that's unrealistic, you know.
Right.
But all we just ask for is objectivity and, you know, taking what we say into consideration. Not that you have to follow it, not that you have to just do what we tell you to do, or for anyone for that matter, because what I find in human nature in general is that people like to give advice, but they don't like to take it. That is very, very common in human beings in general. And I, for one, can say that that is a personal pet peeve of mine, and I'll admit that. You know, and I'm a very observant individual. I notice when people are being very dogmatic about a certain issue that may be near and dear to them, but they're not willing to hear an opposing view. They're not willing to hear any dissent whatsoever, and that becomes very careless, and that becomes detrimental to critical thinking in general, whether you're a believer or not, because what we find is that there are some, not even non-believers. Religion is only one problem in our community as far as issues are concerned. We have mental issues, mental health issues, the physical issues, or what have you, and all of those things have to be tackled, but we have to be objective about them, and be willing to listen to different opinions or different points of view and how we can help each other. You know, so everything, I think that, you know, for all of us, I know that we all come from a caring aspect. No one here is willing or will willingly beat anyone up, or at least I don't think they will.
No, I am. Sorry. I will take it to this. I'm sorry.
What'd you say? You'll take what?
I'll take it to somebody so fast, I'll be in jail.
See?
So fast.
Yeah, and we're just, you know, just with
camp. The other day. So.
Oh, goodness. And one thing that we just want to be careful
Mormons.
Of. Huh?
So with some Mormons. So.
Oh, yeah. It is kind of hard. You know, but just for each other, you know, we're just, we definitely, because we are facing the same issues with non-belief, we definitely, I know that I think, personally, I think that we should have a more caring, you know, caring attitude towards each other. And, yes, I do become incensed when I see someone is insensitive, you know, on any issue, especially regarding non-belief. But then, you know, they're insensitive to others. But then they want people to be sensitive towards them. And that is something that, yes, I do have, I do take issue with. You know, maybe it's not as important to Kim or Ayanna or to you as others, but I can just say for myself.
Okay.
That,
well,
that is something.
And that, even that you can look at and see. Like, okay. I don't speak on behalf of Andifa unless she's already, like, you'll constantly hear me, like, refer to her organization, but I don't say, oh, well, Mandisa believes this, unless she's explicitly stated it. So I think it's very hard in the atheist community because we don't have that collective belief system and because we don't necessarily have obligations that are well, you know, founded. So
yeah.
As far as me, like I said, I'm for promoting positive atheism.
Right.
Basically, humanity without religion, with or without, I prefer without, and just by leading by example, not pressing something on someone or, you know, pushing or forcing someone. I like being asked, well, what church do you go to? Oh, I don't go to church. I don't believe in God. Really? You don't? You're just such a nice young man, and, you know, you do this, this, and that. I'm like, well, I feel like I can be good without that. And that's it.
Well, if you and I think that that's true, though. Like, I mean, I don't know. I've never heard of Mandisa push. I mean, because, like, her organization does meetings, and the meetings attract atheists. Like, I haven't heard, like, oh, you must become an atheist. And you've never heard that from me either and my organization.
Oh.
My organization attracts atheists because they're atheists and because they're facing the issue of solidarity. But with my programs don't help atheists. My programs, and that's one of the distinctions between Mandisa's group and my group. My group focuses on children. And so most of those children are children of Christian households, actually. My goal is to counter what goes on in the household allowing them to have the critical thinking skills. But I'm not out there. I have no communication with the kids. My contracts are only with the teachers. The only person who I ever have contact with are teachers. And so, you know, I give them, I'm not sure if you're familiar with the program, but we basically donate supplies to teachers
in
low-income areas. So what I do is say, hey, what do you need after we've approved, after the board has approved them, say, what do you need? And they give us the list. And I give the list and the contract to the teacher, and then she gives it, she uses it or he uses it for their children, for the students. And that's it. I have no contact with the students, and I assume that most of the students are, in fact, Christian or at minimum religious because they're disenfranchised. That's why we're helping them.
Exactly.
So no.
Exactly.
Yeah, I don't go in the classroom and say, oh, please become atheist kids. Like that's
we're not trying to proselytize on the other side.
No.
We're not trying to be what we fear or what we have disdain for, because you know the majority of us do have an issue with the theists out there that are proselytizing their religion or making it a requirement for anyone to receive any type of help or assistance, and we're not trying to be what we're trying to walk away from.
Right.
Yeah, I don't believe any of us are, you know, trying to push our ideas or ideologies or what have you on other people. Again, it's an individual, you know, individual walk here. It's an individual decision. And with me, again, like I say, I stated it that my views are my personal views. I just feel that it's my personal responsibility to get out here and provide services. And that's why I said, what role will you play in this movement? My role is to offer solutions-based information, solutions-based movement, if you will, to get back and give to the community at large, not just theists or non-theists or what have you, just whoever needs help. I will help you with whatever it is that I can help you with. And if I can't help you, I will do my best to find resources that can assist you with whatever issues you may happen to have. but that's me.
Okay, and
yeah.
I respect that. I totally respect that.
Right, and, you know, again, I don't think any of us have, I know Ayanna said it, I think we all have said it. You know, I know for myself that, and I said this before, I think that it should be, you know, my mission is to reach out to other, you know, closeted non-believers, other closeted atheists, agnostics, people who are questioning, and to help them, you know, help them with that process to, if they are on the road to fully, you know, embracing, you know, non-belief or just secularism or just the world in general, you know, we're here to help them with that. And if they do want to get involved with our organization or other things, or if they just want to be open and just say, you know what, to be able to tell people, yeah, I'm an atheist, what are you going to do about it? So that's
exactly.
The thing is, though, I just don't, like I said, being a former Christian for like, 20 some odd years, so you have certain responsibilities, certain obligations, and certain duties. And so I can recognize when something similar is coming up. And that's what, like I said, got the bad taste. I was like, oh, hold up, this shit again.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I don't see it as the same thing. I mean, I have two issues with, and I'm not saying I'm making this argument, but if you are, then I'm going to attempt to make it. So the first one is basically, like, gatherings are an issue, and this is founded on the idea that, I guess, gatherings or somehow congregations, as they call them in religion, are something that's exclusive to religion, and that's bullshit. That's total
right.
Bullshit.
Yeah, absolutely.
I've had meetings in law school. I had meetings in that had nothing to do with religion, and nobody even thought of religion during these meetings. We were thinking about finance, or we were thinking about management, or whatever it was. And you know that to be true for pregnant women. You know that to be true for, okay, black women, but that's a bad example because it often goes religious. But you know that these are true for book clubs or anything. People meet because we are social beings. So it has nothing to do with the fact that you're not religious. It just happens to be, like, I've gone through this path. I've had this journey. Most of us that are black grew up in religious households. So we are kind of, you know, coming out of that, just like you said, you're coming out of that. And people tend to want to talk to other people who have had similar backgrounds. And so you want to socialize with people like that. And that's totally human. I mean, people do it for sport, people do it for anything. So it has nothing, that's not something that's exclusive to religion. And if you do want to talk about something that I promote, I promote critical thinking. I'll admit to that. I do not promote atheism because I think when people force it on you, you're not going to want to do it. I do force, if you will, critical thinking because I think everybody should think. I'm sorry.
Right.
Like, that's not something I'm going to apologize for, although
right.
It sounds like I just did. It's not something – that's our agenda, to promote critical thinking, for people to think for themselves, for people not to feel obligated to be a part of a religion, for people to have self-esteem. But the main thing, our foundation is promoting critical thinking and telling people it's okay, like, to be atheist, or it's okay to we're not promoting atheists. Like, again, atheism, if that's even such a thing. We're simply saying, you know, here's a group that welcomes atheists, and our agenda is to promote critical thinking. That is it. It's very, like, we've taken one political stance the entire year that we've been in business, and that was on gay marriage equality, and that's it. You've never seen us take any other political stance because we don't really have, that's just not the goal of the organization.
Right.
Exactly. I agree. And it's very interesting because, again, we all have different viewpoints on things, but in the end, it pretty much comes to the same thing. We share non-belief. That's what the majority of us share. And again, everybody has different roles to play, and that's fine because, you know, we're all different, but again, are we helping the people? So some of us may be helping people leave theism, you know, by giving them materials and being a support base for them because that's basically what the theists, that's what they have going for them, the social constructs. So they have their churches, their congregations, if you will, and the majority of people go to church because they've been going for generations or they've been a member of that particular church. There are quite a few of them that don't necessarily believe, but it is it's not conducive to their social construct, in some cases their employment, their business or what have you, to come out as a non-believer. And I understand that. But again, you know, us facilitating a way for people to come out as saying that they're non-believers, that's a good thing, because I believe that all of us have spoken with someone who was on the borderline or someone who was a closet non-believer. And I just think that that's another way we can facilitate, you know, assisting people with that particular support base. But, you know, to me it goes a little bit beyond that, but that's my personal journey.
Okay, and like I said, I respect that, as coming out as atheist or whatever. And I think, you know, from this conversation, I think I know my role now in this movement, and that's to help all these black women that's been trying to convert me back to Christians. I think I found my role. I'm going to be the Steve Harvey of atheism. That's what I'm going to be.
No, please,
Harvey.
No. Oh, God, I hate that man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to be the Steve Harvey of non-believers.
No, no.
Serious. That's all. Listen, I never get guys that try to, you know, I got one guy from prison, but I think he actually probably was attracted to me or something. But, I just, you know, I'm in Arizona, man. I run into some weird people. But
right.
It's usually always women at school, in the library, or, like, it's just crazy. So I think that's my role in this movement, and I'll take that.
Right.
I have a girlfriend, but oh well.
Right. And I don't think that there's anything wrong with us, you know, passionately, you know, stating our point of view. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. You know, if these believers can evangelize, you know, so to speak, then, you know, I just don't see where there is no reason why we can't be as passionate and creative, you know, when speaking about our point of view. I mean, there's no reason why we shouldn't be able to do that at all.
We should absolutely be able to.
I don't know. We got to pick our battles on that, because when you got people in biology class talking about creation, yeah, you know, you got to pick your battles.
In college? Are you in college?
Yeah, in college,
oh, my
yeah.
goodness.
So when did Adam and Eve come?
Right.
So when did Adam and Eve come? Like, everybody looked at that girl like, "You serious?"
Wow. Oh, jeez.
No bullshit.
You always have to pick your battles, no matter what
yeah.
it is in life. I mean, you're not going to get through life if you sit here and nitpick. And please believe, I mean, I've had my times, you know, I've had my times. You know, I have mm-hmm. one of my clients is Jewish and super Jewish. and I mean, like, she that's really retarded of me to say, but, you know, she's very religious, I'll say. And I was working and I had on sandals, and the top of my foot says, "Imagine no religion." And now I could have taken that opportunity to talk to her about, like, why I don't believe, but then I'm looking at my rent and I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. You know what? Hey, yeah, you're right.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean, you have to choose your battle. I'm not one to say, oh, you should be, like, super atheist all the time. Like, you got
right.
things to say, you got things to do. It's not like being black where you can't hide that. It's like, all right, well, and I'm an activist. I mean, if she wanted to look me up, she could. I feel that's kind of her obligation before she decides to work with somebody or hire somebody as her consultant. So, but I do what I'm supposed to do on a job, and religion
right.
Doesn't come up outside of her saying, you know, she's going to work.
Right. I do think that it is important for us, and I wouldn't say it's an obligation. I wouldn't say it's a responsibility. I would just say that I think it's important for us to be honest about that. If with no one else but ourselves, if we know that it is detrimental to come out or to even be vocal about being an atheist because there's a risk of losing business, then it's okay to admit that there is that. We've had people say, you know what, I can't come out. I'll lose support from my family. I would lose business. You know, this could happen. And this is what we serve to provide a support for as well, because if it is not advantageous for you to come out as a non-believer, if you need that support system in order to be able to vent or what have you, that's what we're here for. That's what we're here for.
It's not even not advantageous. It's actually detrimental. Like, that's when I think that, like, you should, I probably advise you otherwise. Like, I'm lucky enough to work for myself.
Right.
But I don't go around telling all of my clients that, oh, I'm an atheist. Like, I just leave the issue of religion alone because it has nothing to do with whether I can freaking review your financials or not.
Right.
You know, it should be a non-issue.
Right, and we agree on that.
You got to pick your battles because I got took out of my aunt's will because I came out. So.
Wow,
That could have been my damn down payment for my house. Yeah.
Right. And, you know, and when you had, and again, you know, I'm sure at the end of the day, you probably felt that it was worth it, to be honest, as a non-believer. I don't know.
A lot of money.
You think about it. Oh, I'll change my mind.
Well, I see the light. Start speaking in tongues.
Right.
I mean, I don't believe in it. So
right. And you know, that is a real fear. That is a real thing that people are, you know, have to take into consideration. You know, that, you know, funds and stuff will be cut off because of that. And we understand, trust me, we understand that it is a real issue. And this is why we're so compassionate for others, because of these things that they have to deal with being a non-believer.
Yeah, as far as picking your battles, too, like I said, I have a rule now. I have 3 questions. If the answers to these questions are wrong, I just, hey, you got to, you know what? At the end of the day, you got your faith, and that's cool.
Right.
I leave it alone. If you believe in talking horses and talking donkeys and frogs and stuff like that.
Right. Don't try to make me believe in it, though. Right. Don't try to make me believe in it.
I don't even ask for evidence no more because I know it's impossible for them to show it. And the end result is going to be faith.
Yep.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's really bad. Like, I remember, totally off topic, but I was reading, someone sent me twice. I received the same a survey or whatever. It was like a study on what's most important to black women with regard to finances, and faith, number one, on both studies. I don't remember if it was from the same company or not, though, because I received the other study like a year before. But the fact that they put faith above, like, I mean, this is the problem, of course, was that we have a serious issue of misallocating funds. Like, even when we do have the money, we don't put it away, and we certainly don't put it away for the next generation. So each generation has to constantly rebuild. But that just goes to show, like, how much of a freaking grip on the community, where women are saying, well, faith, obviously, and from that, they're giving money to churches instead of giving money to the next generation that comes along. I think, you know, going back to the whole right, I think absolutely we have a right. And the obligation, we create our obligations, I'll say that. I think that we form our own obligations.
I like that.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, we have Stanley on the line. Stanley wanted to join in on the conversation. Are you there?
Yes. Great show.
Hi, Stanley.
Hi. I'm so happy to became an atheist. More, I think the whole problem with a lot of Christian or people, believers of religion, is that the more you tell them, find out the information for yourself. Like you said at the beginning of the show, a lot of them are asking, simple question. Did you read the Bible from the top to the bottom? Did you read it end to end? And a lot of them says, no, read the Bible end to end. Tell me, take out a Bible that you don't, a book, and rip off all the pages of all the stuff that you would never accept in your life that it wouldn't accept. Slavery, killing somebody because he cheated, things like that. How could you believe of a God when all those things happen? Also, you can ask questions like, do you know how the Bible was formed? Do you know why it was formed? The New Testament, do you know that there was no witness of Jesus? None. Before gospel was written by mouth to mouth to mouth. How would you feel if I would tell you that no witness was there for the gospel? And that they would, Paul, many of this letter of Paul was wrong, was like forgery. And you just come with things like that. And I think people are getting more and more knowledge. That's why the atheist is coming out, because more and more people are saying, you can't tell me just anything you want. I could come with facts. I could come with things like now. Before, you didn't. Before, you just had to believe because, A, you were scared of getting killed, or, A, you were scared of somebody killed. But now you could challenge them on what they believe. You could challenge them of the things they say and everything. And when you challenge a Christian or a person who's a believer and comes with the thing, like you said, faith. And I say faith, I say to them, faith is believing something that's never been proven. What would you do if all the rest things, all the other things of, that you think are important in your life, you have no faith for them. You believe them because you need to have sense. How come religion, which is something that's very private, you believe it without proof? How can you do that?
Mm-hmm.
And then they stumble.
Yeah.
And they stumble when you tell them things like, how can you believe something that's never been proven? And there's many websites that said the day that you could prove that there's a God, trust me, science people all around the world would be the first one to say, hey, I'm not an atheist anymore. I believe in God because it's been proven. But until you cannot prove it, why should I believe you? And another thing that I hate about Christianity is that they put, like you said in the beginning of the show, that we can't succeed without God. And that's one thing that I say to them. Why can't I succeed without God? I can make great things in my life, and I don't need no God. I take 100% responsibility for everything that I do in my life. You should do the same as a Christian. You should do the same as a human being. And you are a great human being. But if you don't believe that you're a great human being, that's on you. Don't put it on me.
Yeah.
Amen. Rob man to that.
Right. And see, that's one of the things that I'm happy about, and I'm pretty sure that Ayana and Kim and Al, that we're all happy about, is that now there are more questions. It is okay now to ask these questions and to question religion and to say, you know what, well, have you ever stopped to think that this doesn't make any sense whatsoever?
No, man. I usually, like, when someone uses the Bible as evidence, I always ask, well, have you ever read the Bible like you read a Harry Potter book? Like, just read it for face value, like a novel, and weed out the shit that makes sense and don't make sense. Don't try to interpret it or get some type of spiritual utterance. Just read it like a book.
Right.
And I always say, like, you know, not to whatever my education, but the Bible, people act like the only way it works is when you tell people that it's so complex that nobody can understand it, basically, except for these religious scholars. And I'm like, but you didn't have a problem with my reading in any other topic. Like, it's only theists, and it's only when it comes to Christianity. But for Muslims, I've had Muslims tell me that, you know, I don't know what I'm talking about because I can't read Arabic. I'll give them that right because it's true. So, you know, all my stuff is translated. And I have no intention of learning.
Right.
So,
oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I'm not going to do it just for an argument. I'll just rely on what, you know, the translations that I've received. But the point is, and it's never with good things. You know, love thy neighbor, I can apparently understand that. But when it gets to stone your kids, suddenly my reading comprehension skills are suspended. And I'm like, well, you don't have a problem when I mention good things, but you don't have a problem when I'm reading any other. I can read legal freaking jargon, but yet I can't read a freaking fifth grade reading level book written by some men that write worse than my 8-year-old cousin. Like, it's just poorly written. That does not mean that it's so complex that you can't understand it. It's quite the contrary, actually. So, yeah, it requires you to jump through all these loopholes in order for you to convince yourself that, you know, God is good. And that's another thing I was talking about with some atheists yesterday. It was like, I was like, you have to keep embedding that in the child's head in order for people to believe it. Because when you look at the amount of damage that the devil or that Satan or whatever, the evil, has done in the Bible versus God, it doesn't add up at all. So you have to keep embedding, no, God is good, because they have to believe that first before reading the Bible, because otherwise it doesn't make sense. Otherwise, you'll see genocide. Otherwise, you'll see, you know, the approval of rape. You'll see an approval of acts of aggression. You'll see approval of just stupidity. And you have to keep saying that to a child. God is good. God is good, to the point where they no longer think about it. It's just God is good because he's good, not because of anything that he's actually done.
Another question that I come with Christian that really push their butt and make them think is like they keep on saying Jesus was sent in this world because to repair our sin. So I come back with them. I say, you're saying God is the Almighty, has all the power, right? Couldn't just God just forgive us for things that we did in the past without sending His Son? And
right.
Well, He needed to say. Why did He need to say His Son? Me, as a human being, if somebody else does something bad to me, I have the choice to. What, am I going to send my son for something somebody did back to me, or am I going to forgive him? Are you saying that us as human beings has a better power than God? God can't forgive us?
That's the Hollywood result of it. Like, you got to make money off that. Like, that's the whole, it had to be dramatical. Like, he had to send his son and take on the scapegoat of all the world's sins. That's how they got their money.
Yeah, and that's, I always, like, I'm like, you know, I don't believe in human sacrifice. Like, why am I forever in debt for something stupid? Like, I don't believe you should kill. And you didn't even kill. Like, there was no sacrifice. Dude came back a couple of days later. Like, that's not a sacrifice. And it was, even if it were a sacrifice, it wouldn't be one that I would even want to entertain. So, I mean, to me, God is a fuck up. And, like, but since you're told, no, he's perfection and he's good, it's something that you kind of, you start with that premise and then you go into, and then you go to read it when it should be the other way around.
It goes with what Ayanna was saying in one of her debates. The fact that God is all-knowing and all-powerful and unchanging is a contradiction at all. Like, if you know everything, and know all this stuff is going to happen, but you refuse to change, that is some mean shit. Go ahead.
Right.
Why would I worship that? That's one thing I say to them. I say, they always come, oh, Satan came in this world to have our world. And then I say, God is the almighty powerful, right? Yeah. So why didn't God just destroy Satan? To get rid of him. That's it. If I have something that I create that I cherish, that I love so much, and I have the power to destroy something else that's pushing bad things to that creation, I will destroy it. If as a parent I have the power to stop my son or my daughter of having bad things in their life, I will do something about it. I won't just sit down and say, well, they need to learn a lesson. No. That's not being a parent.
Yeah.
That's not being love, you know?
That's the dramatic of it again, man. It's the movie,
I was telling her. I used to work with abused kids, right? So where the state came in and, you know, whatever. So I was telling her about, you know, this kid or whatever, and they were abused after the case closed, but whatever. The child was apparently a victim of child abuse, obviously. And, yeah, you know, she's like, horrible, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, but, you know, when your God allows this to happen, it's not a horrible thing. And then it went to, well, you know, how dare you, you know, judge God? I'm like, well, how dare you have a higher standard for humans than your God? Like, you have this burden that parents have to take care of their kids. And when it comes to God, the ultimate parental figure that you praise all day, I mean, he allows way worse than this mother did, than whatever I've done to her kid. So I'm like, you know, it's funny that Christians or anybody that most theists hold their gods to actual lower standards than they do humans. And then they run back and like, oh, well, you can't question God. That's religion. It has its own best, like, built-in mechanism when it comes to, because they prevent you from questioning it. And once you start asking questions, it kind of tears the whole thing apart.
Yeah, man. A lot of people don't want to question. A lot of people just want to keep on doing their thing. But right now, in 2011, you can't. You can't. There's too many. Evolution is a fact. There's too many. Evolution was one thing that a lot of Christians was not happy about because it dethroned everything that they say because they kept on saying, oh, it's because they're a sinner of Adam and Eve. But when you come to them, evolution is a fact, then you're like, what am I singing about? I'm not singing for any. Adam and Eve didn't exist. So your whole story of Jesus, it went to die for me, for my sin of Adam and Eve, doesn't make sense because Adam and Eve's been proven wrong. So why do I have a sinner about what?
And this, you want to say something?
Oh, no, I'm fine. I think it's Kim.
Well, we have Rasul on the line. Rasul would like to join in on the conversations. Rasul called us last week. he's part of Independent Ministries, and he's a Muslim. And basically, when he called us last week, he gave some very good input. Basically, I'll let Rasul speak for himself. Rasul, are you there?
Yes, I am. How's everyone?
Doing well. How about yourself?
Okay. Peace to the room. I'm just actually listening. I'm enjoying the conversation. And I'm over in New York again, sitting in the park, me and my wife. And I thought about your show. So I'm just kind of listening in right now, just listening to what you guys have to offer and share.
All right. Excellent, Russell. Well, you know, when you're ready to join back in, just press 1, okay?
Okay. Thank you so much.
Okay. Yeah, when he called last week, he called into the show last week, and we were just discussing, it was an open topic show, and he was stating that he felt as though the Bible and the Quran offered some people, basically offered them some hope, and it helped them to become good people. In turn, I questioned him, and I said, well, most non-believers believe in themselves. We don't necessarily need a book, the Bible, Quran, Torah, what have you, to make us good people. And I then proceeded to ask him, does that make us, does that give us any credibility or more credibility than the people who need these books to make them good people? And he says he believes that he gives us more credibility. And I just thought that was a profound statement, especially to someone who still practices their religion. So I just wanted to share that with you guys.
That is awesome. And one thing that I would like to say is that, you know, I was also raised a non-believer. Basically, I was never indoctrinated into religion, per se. And one thing that, you know, or there were many sources. You know, my mom used to let us watch some of everything on, you know, either TV. We read books. So what religion does is skewers the idea that, you know, that you only need this Bible to learn good things. Yeah, sure. You know, you can take some things out of there and learn good lessons. I personally learned good lessons from Aesop's Fables, you know, from different Dr. Seuss books. You know, there are other sources and other places where you can learn good lessons. And I just think that, you know, that needs to be brought back into the forefront, is that it's not this mystical idea that good lessons can be learned from just this, you know, just this different place or whatever. It can be, you can learn from anywhere. It's not a complicated concept.
Yeah, and it also needs to be noted that its foundation is not in the Bible. Like, I mean, the Bible comes with good lessons, but it comes with a multitude of horrible things. So you can't, I think it's a bad, I think that it's okay to have a book with just the good in it without having to rip out the pages on genocide and all these other horrific acts. You know, one of the things that, like, one of my other cousins who says he's an atheist, I don't know what he is.
I said it, Ayana. You don't know what the fuck he is.
I have no, because, you know, he's one of those, not exactly like Black said, but almost. But whatever. But anyway, as far as he's concerned, he told his son at a very young age, write your own Bible. And before he introduced his son to the Bible. And so his son wrote his own Bible or religious text, and basically is like, you know, I want to, I don't know, I want my friends to be nice to me. I want a lot of friends. I want toys. I want this. I want that. But, I mean, it was one of the best Bibles I've ever read, you know, and it had nothing in there about rape or I want to hurt some chick or, you know, like none of that was in there. There was nothing bad in his Bible. And the point of him doing this exercise with his son, he said, was so that anytime somebody said to him in the future that his morality or that his anything came from that his core values came from the Bible, he could show that he wrote this before he was ever introduced to the Bible. And I think that that was a great lesson. Like, he still has the book or whatever. He's much older now, but he still has the book, and obviously he's been introduced to the Bible just because his father kind of figured that at some point somebody's going to go to church or something like that, so he wanted him to whatever. But
Yeah, I think it's important to note that you do not, that, number one, we have laws. So society even says that the Bible is wrong. We have laws that prevent you from carrying out the Bible to the T. If you wanted to and you get caught, you're going to jail. That's number one. And number two, a lot of the, we could have all of the good things in the Bible without the Bible. Just like you said, there are plenty of other sources that don't have the misogyny in there, that don't have all these other horrific elements to it, that teach the same positive lessons to kids. And kids, some kids, most kids have great parents. They can learn it from their parents.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Most men aren't running around raping women or women raping men or whatever. We don't have that issue with most members of society. So I think it's important to note that although it's in the Bible, it predates the Bible. These, you know, people just like, we're social beings. People like living around other people.
Like from my personal experience, because I had to, my mom was an evangelist and I was studying to be a minister. From in the beginning to Amen in Revelations is all wrong, because all the good things in the Bible you're being told to do. And I feel like I don't want to be told to do something good. I'm a human being. It's supposed to be innate in me. Like before Christianity, before even religion exists, like before even before the Sumerians, even the thing I respect about the Sumerians, they knew that it was a myth. They admitted
right.
that it was a myth. They just used it to learn, communicate, and make languages. That was it. But they didn't base their morality off of it. And so the Bible is, like I said, totally, there's nothing good in there for me, from in the beginning to Amen, because anything that's good in there, you're being told to do it, and you're being, like, rewarded to do something good. And I think that's bullshit, because
yeah,
I do things right every day, not expecting something good. Like, I played a lotto.
Yeah.
Why I can't hit the lotto? Like, for real. I feed the homeless. Why I can't get help on my rent?
Right. And I just think the most, like you said, the most important lessons that we can learn from is each other. You know, you can see when someone is doing something good and doing something bad, and you can decide, well, you know, maybe I don't think that's right or whatever, you know. And again, I do think that, you know, just as human beings in general, if we can help someone, because they may not know that something that they're doing is necessarily right or wrong, because we live in a world of different cultures, and what would be considered moral to some may not necessarily be to others. You can always you can always voice what you think. It doesn't necessarily mean you have to take it as law, but, you know, just to gain a better understanding of what this person's viewpoint is, I think it's important to voice that.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I just wanted to announce real quick, we have about 12 minutes left in this show. The telephone number is 310-982-4273. Again, that's 310-982-4273. Press 1 to speak with the host. I'm not sure if we're going to go into overtime today, but if we do, you need to call in before the show ends, because you won't be able to dial in afterwards. But we have Lisa on the line. Lisa wanted to join in on the conversation here. Are you there, Lisa?
Yes, I am. And this is my first time calling in. And I was raised in North Carolina, AME Zion Church. Started having questions about the whole thing, the whole religion thing, probably when I was about 25 or 26. And what set it off for me, I had a born-again, washed-in-the-blood friend.
Uh-oh.
Who told
that was
me,
always creepy.
Yeah, who told me that one of my gay friends, whom was just like a brother to me, one of the best people I ever knew in my life, I was talking about him, and she said to me, well, I hope he does know that unless he repents, he's going to hell. And at that time, you know, I had not read the complete Bible, but had read enough that I was disturbed by a lot of it. But I guess I still believed enough at that point that I thought that if I sincerely prayed and asked God to give me a sign, like all these people talking about God telling them this and that, I figured, you know, God would tell me too. And I was like, you know, if there is something if Bill really is, you know, this person is going to hell no matter what, no matter that he's this fantastic, caring, compassionate, good person, you know, just because he's gay, you know, I want to know. And I also want to know what I can do to help him. Well, I'm still waiting on my answer, you know, 25 years later. I just came out, like, to my mom, like, a few months ago. I was kind of semi-outed by my brother, who is a Paschal's Wager Christian. It's like, well, you know, in case this is true, I want to, this is what I'm going to do, in case it is true. And this is what I believe, in case it's true. Which, again, is like the all-knowing, all-present God wouldn't know that, wouldn't know that you're faking, basically, you know, because you don't want to get left out in case it's all true. You know, I just think it's the biggest load of bullshit. And, you know, the whole industry and the whole, you know, the Bible study and all that crap. You know, why do you have to go down every week for your entire life to study
that
one
and
book?
Why are you dressing up?
Yeah,
right.
Particularly, I read one time one of my Facebook friends was saying, you know, the Bible is like, you know, this person was from Jamaica, and they're like, they only take you to the pretty places. They take you to the pretty beaches in Jamaica. And
oh, that was Noah Stevens, probably.
And okay. It's the same thing with the Bible. You know, they keep going over all the pretty stuff, and God is love, and all that stuff all the time, with the exception of, you know, those couple little chapters in Leviticus or wherever else that they use to bash gay people. You know, but pretty much everything is the sunshine and flowers, and they keep going over it and over it and over it and over it. And, you know, I really feel like churches should have, if they were being honest, there needs to be a sign at the door outside of every religious building that says, you know, just suspend disbelief, or just check your brain at the door and come on in.
Yeah,
you know, because if you really think about it, if you really examine it, there's no way in the world, if you're an intelligent person, that you're going to remain in that life. And, you know, just we're taught to question everything, apply skepticism to everything, except that. But yet that's supposed to be the most important thing that's really supposed to be, according to them, a life or death thing, eternal life or death thing. But you're not supposed to question. You know, it's just crazy and it's nuts. And I had, and I know I'm rambling, but I'm very excited. But I had a girlfriend, a dear, dear friend, who passed away a couple of years ago, breast cancer, 48 years old, beautiful woman. And she left her two young sons in just a mess of the situation because God was healing her. She wasn't going to die. God was healing her. And even after she got the diagnosis that she was terminal and given a window of time that she could expect to live, she never did a will. You know, she didn't get anything in order. And basically, her sons were left with nothing. When they could have had two houses, and earlier, you know, one of you guys was talking about how, you know, people's devotion to church, one big part of it, one big negative of it is that they're giving their money to church as opposed to building up something for future generations. And, you know, she was in denial about her diagnosis because, you know, God was going to heal her. And it just left her kids just out there, you know, just drifting in the wind. And, you know, it's distressing that there's so many people just like that.
Yeah.
You know, just like that. But I'm very grateful for this community, for the community on Facebook, because honestly, I thought I was the only black woman atheist in the entire world until I discovered you guys. You
You're
know
definitely
I mean?
Not alone, and thank you for sharing your story and your experience.
Thank you.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, we appreciate
you,
it.
I just want to know if there were any groups in Carolina that you frequent, atheist groups or freethinker groups or...
I've found out about a couple in the area. I haven't been yet, but I do intend to go. There's a Free Thought Society in my area, and then there's also a Freedom From Religion Foundation group here, chapter here. So I definitely intend to check them out and become active. And the thing, I guess, in my journey to away from religion that I'm most grateful for is that when I got married, I still was kind of a lukewarm believer. And my husband, you know, was kind of in the same boat. And I'm very grateful that we have grown away from it together.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, because it would be a mess otherwise.
Right.
And I kind of, all it took to kind of get him started thinking about it, he would agree with me when I would point out a lot of the contradictions and just a lot of the craziness. And to me, especially as a black person, you know, I look at how I view that religion has really crippled our people. And, you know, the Lord will take care of it. And all I got to, you know, all I can do is pray. You know, when your family is just completely adrift and dysfunctional, and you're talking about all I can do is pray. No, it's not all you can do.
Right.
Yeah. All you can do is do.
Huh?
No, I was saying all you can do is do. Like.
Exactly. I want to hear about, you know, all I can do is pray. When you got, you know, your knucklehead kids not doing right and you're just continuing to enable them, you know, that's a bunch of baloney. And
Can I ask something real quick?
Sure.
Who cooked? Like, who cooked today?
I'm cooking.
I did.
I knew you was cooking. That's why I asked. I knew you was cooking. It sounded like you was multitasking. I was like, she over there hooking it up.
I am.
You know how I do. Wife, mother, all kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Heck yeah.
Well, you know, actually, right now I am cooking and I'm painting the risers on my steps.
Wow.
Okay.
Now, to paint anything, I don't know.
Yeah,
I knew
I
somebody it. Was cooking. That's why I asked. I was like, yeah, somebody hooking it up. I hear pots and pans and everything.
I was going in checking
it out. I know where my mind is. So.
And I just want to say one more thing. Have you guys been hearing this crap now? There's always this, you know, this lexicon, of course, you know, God is good all time God is good, and I'm blessed and highly favored, and you know, they have these little phrases that go in and out of popularity. But now I'm hearing these baby mamas talking about, you know, God gave them this baby. You can't say nothing about them because God gave them this baby. I heard Fantasia say it when she announced her pregnancy by the married guy. I've had family members, like teenage family members, with neither a pot nor a window, talking about, you know, you can't tell them nothing now because God gave them this baby to raise, you know. And it's just like...
There's a big campaign about that it disturbs me to no end, where they're saying, I don't know who it is, but there's a huge campaign. The number one killer of African Americans is abortion. And so it's like, you know, they're trying to remove, from my understanding, you know, abortion clinics out of the black community. And I'm like, I mean, for me, I'm like, no, these are communities that need them. And more importantly, they need sex education.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Even Planned Parenthood, what do they do? When 3% of their services are abortions or something astronomically low like that. But, yeah, I'm like, no, you need to keep these clinics in here because a majority of what the clinics do are sex education, not abortions.
Mm-hmm.
So... anyway, yeah, exactly. There's this huge campaign of, like, don't kill your baby. And it's like, yeah, more abortions happen in poor areas, but personally, I mean, we need the clinics there for sex education. It's because a lot of these people aren't educated on sex. and
right.
Blame it our community.
And abortion is not the only thing that encompasses these clinics. You know, they should, like you said, there should be better sex education, and not just from a dogmatic point of view of, oh, well, you should wait to get married. You know, I think that's a setup for failure.
Yeah,
well, you know,
R. Kelly farts. All R. Kelly farts, y'all. Listen to that music, get in the mood and everything, and you forget to get a condom and all that. That's why we got overpopulation. It's R&B music.
You got the church telling people, you know, don't have premarital sex, but if you get pregnant, you know, they're like, don't you dare think about getting rid of your baby. You know,
right.
Think about getting rid of this baby,
move.
And you know they want to make more of a fuss about if someone who's ill-equipped or not equipped at all to raise a child. They want to make more fuss about that person making the decision to terminate than they do about the fact that this person is out there, you know, having a premarital or extramarital or whatever sex. You know, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. When I was in high school, I did a peer, like, education, sex education program. So it was, they took, like, young high school kids, and then we taught the middle school kids. And one of the kids in there took their mother's birth control pills right before she would have sex with her boyfriend. So she was, and she thought that would work. Number one, I'm thinking, why doesn't the mother realize that, you know, each time that this happened, she's missing a pill, but I don't know how often she was having sex with her boyfriend. But the point was the fact that these kids, the point of the program was to educate them, and we had to let her know, like, that doesn't prevent a child. You're just, wait, number one, wasting your parents, your mom's pills, but, you know, maybe you need other measures. You should be using a condom for one. You weren't using condoms. Like, this is something that they don't want. In our community, we are so against speaking openly about sex, and this is something that we need to stop saying is a taboo because it's detrimental to our community.
Yes, agreed.
We do have an issue with population in our community. We do have people that don't have a pot to piss in bringing in new kids that won't have a pot to piss in when they grow up because they don't, you don't have, you're not, if you're not strong yourself, if you're a parent that's not financially, it's not just love. So you have, you should be financially stable to take care of a kid before you bring one into this world or, you know, I don't know. It's such an annoying thing with our community where we refuse to educate our kids on sex.
And people are too dumb to recognize that they're actually, in my opinion, playing into kind of a right-wing plan, which,
yeah,
go on and have these kids. It's all a part of trying to keep this lower class that's going to be unemployed or that you can pay minimum wage to or less. And folk don't see it. It's not that these people care about your damn baby. They don't, you know, but they do want you to stay poor and ignorant and hopefully it's away from the polls in case you do wake up.
Exactly. And also to rip the rug from under you. If I have a kid, we don't want to support it, though. We want to
exactly
scale back on that welfare. We want to. We don't want to give you any, you or your child, any
right,
help. We want you to end up on the street. Like, you know, we don't want Section 8. We don't want welfare. We don't want food stamps. We don't want any of these public programs to help you out.
And people aren't catching on. They don't care about your baby unless it's a little white baby, preferably a little white girl. That's missing, and we ought to know that by now with the attention going, all the attention that's focused anytime, you know, a white child or a white woman is missing, as opposed to all these thousands of black women and children we never hear a peep about.
Hey, Kim?
Yes, I'm here.
Hello?
Yes,
I would like to pose a question, not to get off topic of abortion, but you know how the Mormons have their, you know, We Are Mormons commercials, like you'll see different type of people. Oh, I fish, I play basketball, I do this, and I'm a Mormon. Like, atheists, should we have those commercials?
Oh, yes.
Oh,
oh, my goodness.
I'll be the first one. I'll be the first one.
Yes. When I saw those Mormon commercials and billboards, I was floored.
I'll be the first one.
Well, we actually have a You Are Not Alone campaign.
Mm-hmm.
which we're asking people to submit videos. You know, they can submit short videos or long videos. And with that, we're trying to make the awareness, you know, a lot more visible to people, to let them know that they're not alone. There are quite a few of us out here, more than what people realize. And, you know, that was even demonstrated yesterday when Ayana was debating on the Sister Talk show. And there are quite a few of us out here, and now many of us are now just gaining the courage and the confidence to come out and let others know that, yes, we're a non-believer. And then, you know, it's also great to have community and have support, you know, for that. And that goes back to what Ayana and Mandy was talking about earlier with the social constructs. We're very social beings, and now we're building our own communities, and we're getting out there, and we're letting people know that it's okay. We don't need God to be good. Morals and ethics did not derive from the Bible.
Well, I'll be the first one to put on one of them little tight shirts and a bike helmet with them little black ties. And go through the whole commercial and get to the end, stop the music, and I'm like, hey, fuck up the whole, oh, change the station.
I just want to chime in real quick. My name is Imani the Misfit.
Hey,
I'm a subscriber. I'm a fan. What's up, man?
Oh, yeah, thanks, man. Yeah, I just want to let you know, man, I've been listening to the conversation go down. Just want to let y'all know that, you know, I appreciate I don't know, it might sound funny, but, you know, a lot of times when people think of black atheists, they think of us as aliens, but I just want to let y'all know that just listening to y'all sound really black, you know what I'm saying?
Reinstated, Mandy, sir.
What?
Yeah. But, like, you know, I know it sounds ignorant, but you know what I mean, like, We sound like, you know, like normal people and not like,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
You know?
Gotcha.
So I just appreciate, mm-hmm. you know, just how accessible y'all sound. And I think it's, you know, important for us to, like, you know, keep promoting this, you know, because, like, I don't know, every day, like, being in the black community, I understand and I realize just how much of a grip religion has on our community and how much damage it really, causes, you know what I'm saying? And it's really, like, it's I feel like it's an emergency to just, you know, to get religion out of, or not even just to destroy it, but, you know what I'm saying, just to promote awareness that, you know, there is an alternative to worshiping Jesus and going to church on Sunday and, you know what I'm saying, reading the Bible and stuff like that, you know. And, yeah, I just appreciate that, you know, there's other people out there that fight just as hard as I am, you know. Just, I just want to encourage y'all, you know what I'm saying?
Yes, thank you, and we support you too.
Yeah, Imani, like I said, I admire your interviews. His interviews is dope. Like, you know, I like how he goes against. It seems like it's always a heterosexual male that's interviewing him and don't understand the difference between bisexual or homosexual. And I go through the YouTube interviews. I'm like, this dude is like, I admire his confidence.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I appreciate that, bro. Yeah.
Yeah,
and another thing that I want to talk, because the young lady was talking about how Fantasia was saying how God gave her a baby, and there was other people that, you know, like to say, I'm blessed and highly saving and stuff like that. Like, I think one interesting thing about religion is, like, they almost tell you indirectly that they know their religion is bullshit, because they're constantly putting remixes on their religion to suit, you know,
right.
You know what I'm saying? I think it's funny. Like, I sit there and I go on Facebook and all day. Sometimes I just shake my head. Sometimes I just can't take it. And I will go and I will embarrass somebody on their status. I'm tired of them promoting this, you know, this sense of, I just got a job after praying for a year. God is so good. I'm like, you've been praying for a fucking year. Why do you think it's God? You know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
It's like really, like, ridiculous things, you know. I just think it's like, it's just, it's almost like they're telling on themselves by saying stupid shit like that. You know what I'm saying? It's like they know that it's a bunch of bullshit, but if we point it out to them, then we're bad people and shit.
Also, my favorite is the prison testimony. Like, always, like I said, I ran into that once, and a dude told me, you know, I used to sell dope. and I used to have women, and I cut them off. I was like, I mean, I'm not against that. I mean, I'm against that, but it seemed like you was living it up. I went to prison. I went to prison, and, you know, I found God. I was like, well, why you didn't find God before you went to prison?
Right.
Oh,
but you see what it is that, like, the church has a way of making you feel bad about everything that you enjoy. And it's like, I know people who live the life that they wanted to be living. They're out there. They got lots of women, lots of money and stuff. And so, you know, your mother who's been praying for you, she's letting you know that because of your lifestyle, she doesn't agree with it, that she's praying for you. You know what I'm saying? And all these elders are praying for you, you know. And you're living a life where you think is, you know, it's the best life. But if everybody keeps telling you that you're lost and they're praying for you, it's like eventually over the years, that shit starts to get into your head and you start to really think, man, maybe I am living wrong. I need to, you know, go to church so that my mother can be proud of me. That's one of the things, I think that's sad. You know what I'm saying? The way, like, the churches rob us of our joy, you know, and they rob us from enjoying things, you know, that we always wanted to have. You know what I'm saying? That's just another reason why I just feel like it's good to promote just the concept of non-belief in the Black community.
Yeah, well, and it also leads to, because the first thing when you're thinking, well, for me, like, something pleasurable is sex, and it's always, like, something that it's, again, it's the taboo. It's like, and that's why people don't have responsible sex. And it even goes all the way down to child molestation. One of the major issues with children not reporting rape is because we don't, we tell them from start that it's a bad thing. Your hand is your hand, your arm is your arm, but your penis, no, that's a wee-wee, or that's an unmentionable, or somebody touched me down there. Like, if we stop making it something that is bad from the start, maybe, you know, we would have kids that feel more, you know, comfortable
with
it,
right?
Yeah, that they're being abused. I mean, that it's because you feel ashamed. It's just like rape victims. They feel ashamed to tell because they feel that they've done something wrong. It's so hard to get women to talk about women that are victims of rape, to talk about rape. The same thing with kids. It's because
And I am one. I'm a victim of. I've been violated. I've been raped, and you know, luckily, you know, I learned at a as a teenager. I'm like, it was good to talk about it. Even in the face of people telling me that, well, maybe there was something wrong with how you presented yourself, because I've always been sexually aware and someone who was never ashamed of being sexual. So that had to have been, for some people, that had to have been a reason why I was raped, why I put myself in that position. But,
right. And it's so widely believed. It's horrible. And, yeah, the church certainly promotes that. Don't speak about things that are important.
That's cool, because I've been raised in a church or whatever, and anybody know the freakiest women is, or the freakiest children or whatever, is the pastor's kids.
Yes.
That's the truth. Or the organ player or the praise and worship team. That's the freakiest people or whatever. I was like, wow.
And the deacon.
The thing about that is, like, you're constantly trying, like you said, you're trying to make something that's good bad. Like, there's nothing wrong with sex, but constantly they tell you there's something wrong with sex. Like, we don't want to talk about it, or, you know, maybe only until marriage, when you get married. And it's fine if you do it on your own, but to have somebody force you to do that is the problem. That's why you have priests that can never get married and never have sex. And why? Sex is a natural physical urge.
You know what? I heard a theory about that is that actually the Catholics consider women to be unequal to men, and actually they consider to be a little bit evil, you know, with the whole story about Adam and Eve, how, you know, Eve brought the sin to Adam. And so, you know, I think the reason why priests never marry and never have sex is because they think that women are kind of evil.
No, what it is that the church wanted their all their material goods. They wanted people who were not going to marry, were not going to have kids, were not going to have any heirs or any heir property, and, you know, to come into the priesthood, you gave up everything that you had to the church to enrich them.
about that.
It's a big contradiction.
And of course, you know, they ain't not going to say that, but then that's where the convenient thing about women can't be trusted, and they're dirty, and they're evil, and they're tricky, and, you know, responsible for the fall of man. That's where that comes into play. But it's really about the money.
Oh,
those
are
the origins,
the
anyway.
Result. That's
exactly.
The end result.
Yeah,
that's
I don't believe that they don't engage in sex. Like, I think a majority of them do, and that's why you keep hearing these stories of it's not even just those that you know, violate. It's, you know, it's also those that just engage with other consenting adults. I know that's the idea that they're not supposed to, but I find it hard to believe.
I'll tell you, Ayanna, I'll tell you from personal experience, it's all bullshit. Like, how you can have sex with a woman, and I feel like I have sex with a woman, and we actually pray for forgiveness afterwards. So I damn sure wasn't asking for forgiveness. I was asking, can I hit it again? Like, for real, can I hit it again? No bullshit.
Wow.
At least you're keeping it real.
I told you, I'm going to be the Steve Harvey of non-belief.
Man, did you see the last BET Awards? I couldn't believe that they gave that man an award and honored that man.
For what?
Like,
comedy was years ago. Like,
right, but I mean, cause, like, he's got to be like one of the most bigoted, like, you know, outspoken people in our black community. Like, every day he's forcing his religious beliefs onto, you know, listeners. Like, people don't tune in to hear his personal testimony about him and God, but he forces that. You know what I'm saying? I don't know.
Yeah,
because
he's not that,
like,
funny, and I think that's part of the reason why.
You know, who's he trying
to
convince?
Well, I don't know. So. I think he is funny, but it's just that, like, he's funny, but, like, in a like, you know, uncle kind of way. Like, he reminds you of one of your older uncles that used to beat your ass, you know what I'm saying, for whatever, you know, just to let you know that he was a man, you know? I don't know if y'all get his radio show, but in DC we get his radio show in the morning, like every morning.
Yeah, we get it here in Atlanta too. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was like, wow, yeah. But I don't know, it is what it is, man.
But sex and church go hand in hand. Like I said, it was people that was having children out of marriage, they come up with some rationalization.
I know, and they're sitting
excuse.
In church. Single mothers, single young mothers. Like, never been married. Not to, I'm like, and that was one of the things I used to get to me. Like, when I see kids my age, well, when I was a teenager, you know, with their child next to them, and I'm like, you know, that was a sin. Like, and it was evidence of a sin. And nobody seemed bothered by it. It was just like, oh, God will take care of your kid. I'm like, no, wait. She had a kid. Like, just take a step back. So, yeah, I was extremely judgmental, but it's because I was trying to follow the Bible. The Bible said that you can't do that, you know.
Ayanna, God works in mysterious ways. We don't know his, we don't can't think about his logic.
No one can know his ways, but everybody tells you, so many of these folks tell you exactly what he means and exactly what he wants and what he told them.
Right.
But the funny thing is that the funniest thing is that, like, the girls who have babies out of wedlock, like, most of them were always related to the pastor in some kind of way. Like, in the church I grew up with.
Yeah, my
always
pastor,
related to the pastor.
Or my mom's pastor had sex with two of my friends. And like, he has a wife. And my friend, so he's the same age as my parents. And they've been married about the same, like, 35 years, something like that, him and his wife. So I'm like, and I told her this, and she didn't believe me because it's the pastor. He would never do that. But the two women that he slept with, neither of them knew he was a pastor at the time they slept with him. And I'm like, you know, he's a jerk, you know, like, and I'm like, you're still giving him money. And besides that, I mean, he bought a house with the church money. He drives a Rolls Royce, like, and has, like, they between his family, I think they have about five, like, luxury cars. And
I'm just like, you're still giving him money, he's living a better lifestyle than you, and he's having sex with the only two people that I know are my two friends. But I'm like, I'm sure there are other women, you know. Why would he stop? But, yeah, so I totally, I can't stand these people.
So if I was checking out, so y'all know me, like where I stand or whatever. If I was to become a pastor, like, would y'all think ill will of me, or would y'all think that I just made a good career decision? Like,
I would think you're a hustler.
The preacher hustle.
Hey, man, I respect it. I still call it to the show and, you know, talk, but I just think, for real, they set up. Like, my pastor, my former pastor or whatever, he set up, like, for life. Like, that dude don't have to
work
again, and I'm thinking,
man, I thought about becoming a pastor when I seen the type of stuff they, and I've been this outspoken atheist like for a long time, but when I see how much money these pastors are making, like, it's crazy. Like, I want to become a pastor, like, and I know a lot of these pastors probably don't even believe in the stuff that they're saying.
No.
There's no way possible they believe it.
Yep.
But yeah, it's like they come to the church. It's like these people come to these mega churches because they want to be hypnotized. So it's like the pastor knows that they're just, they have to say something that's going to make everybody feel good, and they get paid for it.
Yeah.
Exactly. And that's the topic for next week. We're going to be talking about non-believers in the pulpit all the way to the pews. And, yeah, most of them are set up for life. They have their golden parachutes waiting for them. But when you try to explain that to the members, it's interesting because they want to believe, and they'll tell you it's okay for the pastor to be rich because look at all of these rappers and celebrities, yet they don't want their pastor held accountable like these rappers and celebrities. But again, it goes back to the fact that many of them are living vicariously through the pastor. They know they'll never attain that type of wealth, so they're happy to see the pastor get it, even though the pastor in the background, they talk about a lot of their members, because I used to be a minister at one of these churches, a big church at that. And we would go to the back, and the pastor would sit back there and basically laugh at the members. And they would have, like, barbecues or social gatherings, and I'd be sitting right next to the pastor. He'll have a big, giant, one of those big Quick Trip cups of Coca-Cola in it, but everybody thought it was Coca-Cola, but I knew it was Hennessy. Why? Because he went to the school before we went to the party.
My pastor smoked weed, so I mean, I ain't stupid. Like, I caught him one time. He was just like, you know, he made up some excuse, and I bought into it, but I was young, so.
Well, I'm going to have to exit from the overtime conversation. I appreciate speaking with everyone here. It was so great to hear from Ayana, Alf, Imani, Lisa. So I'm going to, well, I'll talk to y'all next time.
All right.
Thank you.
All right, y'all. See y'all next week.
All right.
On Facebook.
But it's really interesting. Yeah, we're still here. We're still going. She just wanted to let you all know she was dropping off the line there. And Ayana has dropped off the line as well. So it's just the rest of us, and that's fine. But we have 612 on the line. 612, are you there?
I'm still here. I got to get my chuckle in when you start talking about becoming a minister. Wow, now that's one way to end poverty, huh?
Man, right?
It's a joke. I'm not serious. But, I mean, some of us are well-versed enough to, say, become ministers with a twist and start reteaching people the new truth.
Yeah, I can sing. So, I mean.
I mean, you brought up a good subject, hit the nail on the head about that religion, as far as some of the pastors and Kim had commented on how they talk and et cetera, et cetera. And it's like, you know, look at these fools. They're just giving us our money. Why don't we give them a better service in religion as the free thinkers or free thinking or free thought and say, look, this is what we need to do, such and such and so, and what do you say, reroute that towards community service. Dang, I have to. I'm dreaming.
Great show, guys. Great show. I just love all the different comments and the different angles from every which way you guys are coming from. Excuse me, I found a little hoarse because I still have the remnants of a cold. But I'm going to shut up and listen now.
No, I understand. I mean, there are some people out there, if you started up your church, you know, it's nothing that anything the rest of us can say. I would just say I wish you well and send us some donations.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. We have a unified community church.
I think it's a great business decision, you know?
Yeah, we did a little research on that. It was kind of interesting that the low end of the pay scale is $55,000 a year.
Yeah, my conscience would eat me alive. I couldn't do it.
I couldn't do it either, honestly. But I have other ways to get around that religiosity.
That was a big word.
Wow.
It's just
interesting. But, you know, again, next week's topic is non-believers, you know, from the pulpit to the pew. And that should be an interesting show because we're going to talk about Bennett's study that he did with Linda DeScola regarding people who are practicing priests, ministers, so on and so forth, and how they're non-believers and how many of them can't leave their congregation because that's all they know. Their undergraduate and graduate degrees are like in theology and Bible studies and things of that nature, so they don't have a skill set to go out and market themselves and become, you know, economically independent of the church. So many are still in the pulpit because of the fact that it's just all they know. You know, their careers, their livelihoods basically is tied to that. And, you know, so we wanted to talk about that and also the behavior of some of these ministers as well as, you know, some of the members, because if they truly believed in the Bible and their God, they wouldn't behave the way that they behave. So, you know, it should be an interesting conversation. The Sunday after that, which is the first Sunday of November, November 6th, we will have the Black Skeptics group on. So we will have Tiki Boo Hutchinson on. Jeffrey Mitchell will be here. I believe Naomi Washington will be here as well. I have to go and look at the itinerary. But it should be a good show as well. They're going to tell us about their Black Skeptics group. They've engaged churches in debates and forums. And, you know, that's something that I know that Ayana and Mandy plans to do going forth. And I plan on doing that next year as well. So I just wanted to kind of give you all some insight as to what's coming up in the future. And, you know, we're going to go ahead and close out tonight, but I just wanted to thank everybody who called in. I wanted to thank them for calling in. I wanted to thank everybody who came into the chat room. We're thanking everyone who's going to listen to the archives. You all were great, excellent conversation. We invite you to call back in next week, you know, tell someone about the show. Call in. We enjoy, as you can tell, we engage with people. We allow you to have your opinion, even if it's a dissenting opinion. That's fine, too. But we just wanted to let you guys know that we truly, truly appreciate you guys. And I look forward to seeing you all on Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr. And I look forward to seeing you all again next week. Until then, you all enjoy your day now, okay?
Okay. Is the episode going to be on your Blog Talk Radio page?
Yes, sir. It's going to be on the Blog Talk Radio show, and in about an hour or so, Blog Talk Radio is going to send the archive to my Facebook page. It's done automatically, so you can find that on there as well.
All right, sounds good. It was nice talking to you guys.
Yeah, the pleasure was mine. You all take care, and like I said, enjoy the rest of your day.
All right.
Okay.
Don't believe in God? Questioning your faith and beliefs? Proud to be an atheist but are tired of that worn out does God exist debate? Well, you are not alone. Come join the Black Nonbelievers of Atlanta. We are a new organization that engages in social events, community service, and secular
activities.
You'll be amazed at how engaging and refreshing our activities are. With Black Nonbelievers of Atlanta, we welcome all nonbelievers, regardless of sex, sexuality, gender identity, age, national origin, or race. We extend a caring embrace to all who wish to participate in instilling a meaningful, rational life. It doesn't matter if you're newly relieved of religion or a lifelong non-believer, you are welcome. We provide outreach to educate the public about the views of non-believers. If you are ready to leave religion altogether, we are the perfect group to usher you out. Learn more about us by visiting our website at blacknonbelievers.org. That's blacknonbelievers.org. We are growing by leaps and bounds. With us, we're good without God.